Well, what's up, all of our liberty-loving friends? This is another fantastic episode of Liberty at Night with Nate and Charlie on the Free Talk Live Network, coming at you live from Nashville, Tennessee. And Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. With fees of less than a penny per transaction, Dash is made for spending. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges, including the decentralized main protocol and in multi-crypto wallets. Thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month for this sponsorship. It's easy to get and use Dash. You can learn more at Dash.org. That's Dash.org. Well, happy Tuesday, everyone. Thank you so much for being here. Not going to be here next week, actually. I'll go ahead and tell you that. Right off the bat, I'm going to Peru tomorrow, and I'm going to be gone for a couple weeks, really, a little less than a couple weeks, so I'll be back the following Tuesday. It's going to be a good time. Hope everything goes well. Charlie's going to be keeping the ship afloat while I'm gone over at Good Morning Liberty. That's our daily podcast that Charlie and I do. Our tagline is Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Meaning, and we do a new show every single day of the week when we want to. So if you want to hear us every day, not just on Tuesday nights on Liberty at Night, you can go to our podcast on your favorite podcast app and look for Good Morning Liberty. We have 1,225 episodes on that podcast channel. There wasn't a lot of news over the weekend. I don't know if you looked at the news. But there wasn't a ton. I kind of had to scrape the bottom of the barrel to find things to talk about today. They're going to be interesting. It's fine. We're going to talk about such fun things as killing dogs and maybe a little bit of economics and potentially some Ukraine. Are you trying not to sneeze?
Yep.
That is not the sun, but did it work?
Well, I try to actually look at it to sneeze.
Okay. I got you. Sorry. I was distracted by Charlie's almost sneeze. I was trying to get ready for it.
Oh, man. Yeah, COVID's still lurking.
Yeah, it's always COVID. Of course it's COVID. Yeah. That's for sure. So anyway, this is Good Morning Liberty. We talk about life, liberty, and the pursuit of meaning every single day of the week when we want to. Smash, follow, subscribe. All of the buttons that you can find, any button associated with us, smash them.
Kiss, marry, kill. You know, same thing.
Do all of those things and leave a rating and review. Join the Fed Haters Club. That's who's hanging out with us live right now. Joingml.com brings you to the Fed Haters Club. And I don't have any more announcements, man, except for that I'm going to Peru and I'm going to be leaving Nashville on Wednesday, going to Peru on Thursday.
Now, your plan was to become fluent in Spanish.
Yes. See.
How did that go?
Not good.
Do you think once you get there, though, and like you're immersed in language,
that'll be it? Yeah, that'll be it.
Start, yeah, you know, because you maybe you built the neural pathways.
Sure.
By listening to Babbel?
No, I was on
Duolingo.
Duolingo.
Yeah. Maybe that's the problem.
I mean, if they want to sponsor the show, that's fine. I'll say that they did a great. It was me who gave up. Okay. I gave up.
Oh, okay.
Because I got bored. Actually, what happened was I had a streak going of 130 days where I had done a lesson every single day and I broke my streak. And then I was so upset about breaking my streak, I didn't want to go back and do it anymore.
You gave that up.
That was about 2 months ago.
It's like your sobriety.
So I stopped. Yeah. I'm like, no, I would never give that up. Okay. Until I don't need it anymore.
All right. What are we talking about today?
Let's talk about killing dogs because that's one of the things that's in the news right now. Why not talk about something topical and we can debate over whether or not killing a dog is a good thing to do? No, this. Listen, I told you we're going to scrape the bottom of the barrel, but this could have election implications right here because Kristi Noem wrote in her own book, or her ghostwriter wrote in her own book about her having to kill a dog on the ranch. And she wrote it, she told the story, and they wrote it down in a book, and they're putting it out in an election year where people have been talking about her potentially being the vice president pick. And she thought that was a good idea.
We actually saw her and
we did.
Went to South Dakota.
Mm-hmm. That was
she gave a speech at Freedom Fest. Yeah,
2021. That was one of the only states where you could even host a conference at that time.
That's right.
So we like her more than a lot of other governors, even though she also does a lot of really dumb things.
Yeah.
But now before we just dog on her too much, why don't we talk about the story real quick? Miss Noem a Republican who's widely seen as a contender to be former President Donald Trump's running mate, shared details about shooting the 14-month-old dog, a female wire-haired pointer named Cricket. I don't know what kind of dog that is, honestly. And an unnamed goat. The goat did not have a name. According to excerpts first reported by The Guardian, an avid hunter, Miss Noam wrote that she had hoped to train Cricket to hunt pheasant, but that she proved untrainable, dangerous to anyone she came in contact with, and less than worthless as a hunting dog. She said, "I hated that dog." Miss Noam wrote, "What is that sound coming through? It's so loud." "I hated that dog," Miss Noam wrote, according to The Guardian.
"You hate that dog?
I hate that. I'm going to shoot that dog." It was after Cricket ruined the hunting trip, killed another family's chickens, and bit the governor that Miss Noam recalled deciding to kill the dog. She shot Cricket in a gravel pit.
Mm.
She took the dog to a gravel pit. So I got to tell you, this political controversy in front of us right now, it's not the most obvious controversy I've ever seen, because when they describe the dog as having bit a person, kill the neighbor's chickens, and I don't know, something else that was bad, dangerous to anyone she came in contact with. I don't think you just say that, well, she killed it because it was a bad hunting dog. Like, oh, you suck at hunting, so I'm going to kill you. What's your position on killing dogs, Charlie? Where do you draw the non-aggression principle line? Let's dig into the weeds here on this very important story.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Yeah, you don't want to kill dogs.
I think that most...
How many dogs have you killed?
None.
You haven't killed any dogs?
None that I know of.
So you just let your dog run around biting defenseless people?
No.
Oh.
Of course not. I've never had dogs that do that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I got you.
But here's my thing. For the most part, most dogs, even if they're ferocious, can be trained.
Yeah.
Typically. Yeah. Now, some dogs can't.
14 months seems a little soon to pull the plug, honestly, right, on a dog.
Right.
You know.
But at the same time, I mean, you know, back in the day, you know, if a horse broke its foot.
You shoot. But that's a medical issue. You know,
this thing's biting people. And
yeah. Know? Yeah. So you're defending killing dogs.
I'm not defending killing dogs.
You're pro-dog killing or anti-dog killing? What's your position on the matter?
I'm anti-dog killing.
Even if it attacks people?
But I don't know if this is... I don't know. I don't know that this would be some kind of crime. Now, does this look bad?
It's not a crime, no.
Does this look bad in polls? Absolutely.
We've allowed animal murder for a long time.
This is going to, absolutely destroy her chances, I think, of being any type of VP nom.
Should she be written off by Republicans after this story came out? What do you
probably.
Think? Or should probably. Republicans take the pro-dog killing angle and defend this as if it were Trump himself that decided to pull the plug on the dog? No.
Now, Trump could do this, be just fine.
I mean, he could shoot in the middle of Fifth Avenue. It would be fine.
Gain more supporters, yeah. The dog lied.
He could record it and sell the
lied
NFT
like
rights.
CNN. It was a fake dog. I shot him.
Okay. Anyway, I think that was... I think that's the only
Is that
part
the top
of that
story?
That's the top story from in the news weekend? Over the weekend that I could find. If anyone else
has
any
said
other,
anything about this?
Yeah, she defended it. I didn't find it prudent to bring in her defense.
Okay.
But she did say it was a 20-year-old story and that the dog was dangerous and that they had to make some tough decisions on the ranch. Mm. Now, if the dog's biting people, I mean, even if you give it to the animal shelter and it's biting people, like they're going to kill the dog. Like,
yeah.
They'll kill it.
Well, that's here, what's especially like, okay, if... If an animal, you know, bites someone else's kid or something like that, typically that, like, once they're known as a biter, typically what'll happen, and it depends on the county you're in, but especially around here, if it ends up biting another kid or something like that, they will put that dog down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe they decided to do it themselves. I don't know. I feel like that's a little, I don't know if psychopathic is the right word, but just
it's a little bit
to get in the mindset of like, you're just going to take your dog out to a gravel pit and shoot it in the head. I mean,
yeah.
And then not feel bad about that.
I feel like I would feel bad about that.
Makes me a little sick,
mm-hmm.
You know, makes me a little sick to my stomach thinking about that.
Okay. So you're
and then to tell the story and put it in a book.
Yeah. That's,
That's the other weird thing.
That's the really dumb part.
You know?
Yeah.
Should have buried that story underneath the dog.
Yeah, never tell anyone about that story. Never
bring it up again. Yeah.
So, okay.
Or the only way you tell it is like, man, I feel so horrible. I made this mistake 20 years ago. I wasn't thinking like that. That would be the only way to really bring that up. But to come out and defend it, be like, yeah, it was, you know, bad dog.
Mm-hmm.
What do we do to bad people? Bad dogs. Shoot them.
Well, that's the latest news we have on Puppygate 2024. If you guys see any more breaking news pertaining to this, she also killed a goat afterwards on the same gravel pit. Mm. It was a mean goat. It was always bothering people.
We have lots of biting goats around here in these mountains around here in College Grove.
Yeah, you should kill them.
She says here, Cricket the untrainable dog, Noam writes, behaved like, quote, a trained assassin. Well, oh, it was a Russian dog.
Wait.
This is Putin's.
Just went around poisoning people.
This is Putin's pet.
Wasn't it supposed to be an assassin, though? I mean, they were literally.
She should say that this dog was a gift from Putin.
There you go. Putin's dog. That's why she put it down.
And she had to put it down.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's move on to something else. 2 minutes spent on this because, I'm out of here on Wednesday and might not be a dumb leap of the week on Wednesday since we just did one. I'm going to spend a couple minutes on this. The White House posted this chart. And they said American workers are seeing wages grow faster than prices as our economy remains strong. President Biden will keep working to build an economy where the middle class has a fair shot and no one is left behind.
No.
You don't leave anyone. They posted this chart and it says that real wage growth is stronger than any other major economy. And it says the U.S. is up 3%, and then France is down 0.4, Canada's down 1.4, UK, Japan, Germany, Italy down 9.1. Holy crap. I guess they need Joe Biden in Italy. That's where he needs to move on afterwards.
Yeah.
The really funny part about this chart is that they started pulling their data from 2019. They didn't start pulling their data from when Biden became president or anything like that. They started pulling the data from when Trump still had a little over a year left in office. And we went through the whole COVID pandemic and all of that as well. So I wanted to talk to you all about that for a second. Why is it that they would actually decide to start from Q4 of 2019 instead of looking at Biden's performance on real wage growth, because he's been out there saying that wage growth is outpacing inflation. People are getting paid more and the products are not moving up in price quite as much. And he's been out there telling people that. Democrats are out there telling people that. But they had to reach back to 2019 to give you this 3% number. And I'll tell you why, because if you even start to move to 2020 or especially 2021, the number is negative. And it contradicts everything that they've been out there telling people. They would actually have to post that wages have gone down while Joe Biden was in office, regardless of all the things that they did.
And people know that.
They do know it.
This is just an example of gaslighting.
It is.
It's like you know something to be true. You can feel it. You go to the grocery store, the gas station, your son's baseball games are more expensive now. I mean, my God.
Was he playing the major leagues?
I know. That's what I was. Went to a game on Saturday and I got a burger and a dog and a couple of Gatorades.
Did you kill the dog?
No.
Okay.
No, they killed it.
Okay, I gotcha.
And gave it to me. I wouldn't do that. Couple of Gatorade and it was like $16 I had to donate. Donate to these people.
Well, I know what you're thinking. I wasn't going to bring the actual data, but I went ahead and did it anyway.
Yeah, you did.
So I wanted to show people this. Now, this is not a defense of Trump, but I'm talking in relation to an election where Trump and Biden are running against each other, and Joe Biden has been out there telling people that wages are growing faster than inflation, and so we have actual real wage growth. And I drew a bunch of lines on here. And what we have is the median usual weekly earnings for wage and salary workers, everyone above the age of 16, because what they used in this chart was basically everything. They used our weekly or monthly earnings for everyone.
And deflated. by national CPI.
Yeah, yeah. So against the CPI to show the real wage growth. And so we did this. This says median usual weekly real earnings. So real earnings on this chart means that that's taking into account inflation. And so this line right here where it says data in chart, it's not exactly what they said, but it's pretty close. It says 2.49% positive. The first interesting thing is that they went to Q4 of 2023. They didn't go to Q1 of 2024, which is data that we have available right now. And so
that
instead,
would be 0.83%.
Because that's only 0.83.
Yeah.
And so they went to Q4 of 2023 for some odd reason, even though we have the data for the first quarter of this year as well. That's actually
that gives
a 0.83%.
Positive number. Look.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that would give them a positive number.
That's it. Because if you
They started down here.
If they just start from right there.
Yeah.
When the pandemic ended or some whatever they want to call it. Since Joe Biden has been in office, this median usual weekly real earnings for everyone is down 2.14%. And so the fact of the matter is that taking everyone's wages into account and taking inflation into account, that wages are down since Joe Biden got into office. Now, that's not all Joe Biden's fault. I'm not saying it's all Joe Biden's fault. Trump signed the CARES Act and the law, $2.2 trillion got spent. He presided over a lot of locking down of the economy that occurred while he was the president, presided over a Fed that printed tons of money and ended up causing a lot of inflation. But then Joe Biden came in and we got the American Rescue Plan. We got the CHIPS Act. We got a whole bunch of other, the Inflation Reduction Act, all that kind of stuff. So he saw a burning fire and he dumped a 5-gallon bucket of gasoline on it, essentially, is what happened with Biden. Now, while Trump was in office, and I'm not going to count COVID because that would be ridiculous. I'll tell you why here in a second. While Trump is in office, the real wages went up by 4.26%. And so you see why the Biden administration and the Biden campaign has to cherry pick what month or what quarter they decide they're going to pull their data from. Why did they pick Q4 of 2019? Literally, your guess is as good as mine. Maybe they wanted to say since before the pandemic, the United States has done better than all of the other nations in recovering from the pandemic. You could make that argument that our wage growth has been higher if you use faulty inflation numbers to calculate that.
Yeah.
But they would not want to show what's happened while they were in office. Now, when they talk about jobs numbers, they will talk about from the time that they come into office and all of those jobs are because of Joe Biden. You know, that's the day. He's not going to start Q4 2019 because that's before all the jobs got lost. When you're talking about COVID, he doesn't want to do that.
It's the same thing when they talk about billionaires and all the money they made. They start at the very bottom of the market when the stock market crashed, essentially. Mm-hmm. Okay, there were halts. I remember.
It was crazy.
Clearly.
Crazy.
The S&P 500 halting.
Numerous times,
yeah. Which hadn't happened
since the 87 crash, I believe.
Yeah, which is just insane. So anyway, the stock market basically crashed. We propped it up. But anyway, they count from the very bottom all the way to the freaking top in November of 2021. And we had all these stories come out about how billionaires have added trillions to their coffers because and the data set they chose is very obvious. So it's, you know, somebody mentioned in the live group, statistics is such an easy way to manipulate. You can just pick certain data points, create a chart, right? And put that out there and say, oh, look, I can substantiate my claims.
Yeah.
And very few people, in fact, you might be the only one I know of. It's rare. That's actually going to go look at the data, the real data, and see like what actually happened.
Well, I had this really great example in my statistics class in college. The first day he walked up there and he said, you know, while, you know, people are worried about Islamic terrorists in the United States, well, when you look at the data, there's no reason to be worried. Now, keep in mind, this was in like 2006. Or 2007, something like that. He came in, he said, well, when you look at the data, there's no reason to be worried about that. In fact, since September 12th of 2001, Islamic terrorists have killed hardly anyone in the United States. And so the fact that people are worried about this is just not backed up by any data whatsoever. Look at this chart that shows the amount of people that have been killed by these terrorists since September 12th of 2001. Mm-hmm. You know, why did you, he was making the point, why did he pick September 12th? Everyone knows. Yeah. Because if you pick September 11th, then the chart jumps up immediately. You can tell whatever story you want with data, depending on where you decide to start collecting your data. And the thing with COVID where you see, look at this median usual weekly real earnings just spikes up like crazy during COVID. If I was a president, I would institute another pandemic immediately. This is how you solve the problem.
I think they're working right on here. That. Yeah. I think they are.
It's great for the economy.
Yeah.
Now, what actually happened here was there was hardly any inflation because people weren't out buying anything during this time. There was actually a little bit of disinflation at that time. I don't think it dropped to deflation. Maybe it did. Actually, for a bit, I don't remember. But there's hardly any inflation because people stopped buying stuff. They weren't out shopping.
Well, at the first, everyone bought into the 2 weeks to flatten the curve thing. Everyone's mm-hmm. like, okay, 2 weeks, we can do it. Everybody stay home for 2 weeks. Okay, cool. And then that kept getting extended and people got fed up and they were like, oh, okay, yeah, this virus really isn't killing that many people. I'll chance it. Mm-hmm. And then lots of people started chancing it, you know?
Chancing it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a verb.
It's one word.
Yeah, chancing it. and then turns out,
well, the other thing,
we gave a bunch of people money.
That's the other thing that happened.
And then they started spending.
We gave people unemployment during this time where I don't know if you guys remember, but you were actually able to make more money off of unemployment than you even were at your job.
And you were at unemployment.
And there was really no inflation to factor in. And so therefore these median usual weekly real earnings spiked up like crazy because there was no inflation and the government was giving everyone money.
You're getting everybody like a couple extra $1,000 a month.
But then the point is this afterwards is because of the reason that this spiked up right here. The reason it's dropped so much, because look at this trend we were on. It was just rising. You know, say during the Trump years, I'm sure the Obama years are similar before that as well. Just rising. Then we get this massive spike, which is a spike of fake money and shutting down the productive side of the economy. And then this break of the trend afterwards is because we did this. There's always a trade-off. And right now we live in the trade-off. And Biden's not going to admit that.
We're paying for all the free things we got in 2020 and 2021.
All right, we'll be back. A little more news of the day on Liberty at Night with Nate and Charlie on the Free Talk Live Network.
On Free Talk Live, we're bringing people to the ideas of liberty every day. From wrestling superstars like Glenn Jacobs.
You guys really are having an impact, I believe. Like I said, a lot of where I am now is due to listening to Free Talk Live. You changed my mind on some very important issues years ago.
To random people tuning in on the radio.
I was kind of stuck in the left-right paradigm. I heard your show by chance on a Saturday night. From there, I went on, joined the Free State Project and become an amplifier. So, I mean, that's really the reason why I amp is because I know that if it wasn't for you guys being on as many stations as you are, I never would have found the ideas of Liberty.
You can help more people hear the message of liberty by joining Free Talk Live's AMPS program on Patreon for as little as $5 a month. And you'll get access to special perks. Visit amps.freetalklive.com, amps.freetalklive.com.
And we are back. Liberty at Night. On the Free Talk Live Network, Liberty Night with Nate and Charlie on the Free Talk Live Network, coming at you from Nashville, Tennessee. Segment number two, we got a couple hours left after this. Dumb Bleep of the Week, all kinds of good stuff coming up. Got a great interview coming up here in a bit, too. But first, I got to tell you guys, the Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. With fees of less than a penny per transaction, Dash is made for spending. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges, including the decentralized Maya protocol and in multi-crypto wallets. Thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month for this sponsorship. It's easy to get and use Dash. You can learn more at dash.org. That's dash.org. Once again, I got to tell you guys, Charlie and I have a daily podcast, every single day. We talk about whatever news is going on, talk a lot about economics and the impending World War III. And we're talking about these campus protests and all kinds of stuff going on right now. It's called Good Morning Liberty. At night, Tuesday nights on the Free Talk Live Network, we call ourselves Liberty at Night because Good Night Liberty sounds kind of sad. Although maybe more accurate, and that's what we should have gone with. I don't know. But anyway, every single day of the week, we have a show called Good Morning Liberty. You can go to your favorite podcast app, any app that has podcasts, and you can search Good Morning Liberty, and you can find 1,225 episodes of Good Morning Liberty. Actually, there's a little bit more. Those are just the ones that I have numbered. It's probably more like 1,250 episodes, something like that. Plenty of stuff. You got a lot of stuff to catch up on. Ain't nothing free, especially $20 an hour minimum wage, Charlie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Look at this headline.
Washington Times. Fast food chains find a way around $20 minimum wage. Get rid of the worker.
Huh.
Who would have thought?
And you don't have to pay a minimum wage.
Huh. In response to a recent minimum wage increase in California, fast food restaurants across the state are shifting to automation to get rid of wage-earning humans.
Huh.
Because the, you know, those robots, they're not out protesting.
Well, they haven't unionized yet.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
The move to making customers place orders at digital kiosks alleviates what owners say is the financial strain of rising labor costs after minimum wage for the state's fast food workers increased on April 1st from $16 to $20 per hour.
What about this? What if you make these, someday you actually make robots and you license them to the restaurant where they have to pay you a fee similar to a wage for a worker, but it's licensing the technology out to them. So then you as a company that builds this technology, you rake in all of this licensing money that they used to pay out the workers. It's way less now. It's better for them now, but mm-hmm. now it all comes to you, you know? It's a pretty good idea.
Well,
I'm sure people are doing it.
They're going to make residual because obviously you sell them the technology, and then there probably is a service fee slash a management fee,
probably
of that. So, but a lot of these like bigger places like McDonald's, they have their own software. So actually, if you have a franchise, that franchisee is going to pay corporate. That's part of their monthly.
Mm-hmm.
Or yearly, whatever the agreement is for their franchise, it includes those types of things. And so
licensing the brand name at your establishment.
Brand name, the software, the computer, all the stuff. All right. Harsh guy or guy.
Sounds like a harsh guy.
Harsh guy. He's a Burger King franchise owner who manages 140 outlets along the West Coast, says you can't have it your way. He's leading the transition to automation. Now, see, what's wrong with transitioning? You know?
Yeah.
These kiosks identify as human.
They're trans workers.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't even have to go to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He plans to introduce digital kiosks across all of his restaurants within months, a drastic acceleration from his original timeline of 5 to 10 years. Now, who would have thought that this would have these kinds of consequences?
Literally no one predicted this was going to happen.
Yeah, this is unprecedented.
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
The majority of that is going to get absorbed in the inflation of our food costs, Mr. Guy told Business Insider. So we're not even compensating for most of the labor costs that we're going to be experiencing with this legislation.
Hmm.
So still going to lose money. I got to tell you, man.
Still going to raise the price of their food.
You know, the other day, I brought you lunch and I forgot about it. Sat in my truck for a while.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But just for you and I to get just normal beef and cheddar meals with curly fries and a little cup of cheddar. This is a normal meal, okay?
Standard American meal.
At Arby's.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
They have the meats.
They do. I ordered two of those, one for me, one for you. And the total was $27.58.
Wow. Holy crap.
I was like, what?
Ugh.
I could have gone to Olive Garden for cheaper, yeah. You know, and got unlimited breadsticks.
Mm-hmm.
Filled my fat face.
Some of that Zuppa Toscana.
Yeah. And $27.
That's a lot.
I looked afterwards because I didn't even, I don't really look at the prices because obviously I'm a privileged white male. So after he said the total, I looked back at what the price of the meal was. I didn't get medium or extra large, it just like a regular classic. It was over $10.
See, you just described one of the reasons that prices can go up in an environment. Now you have more money because you have a nice job, you know, cushy white American life that you're living over here.
Yeah.
Rolling. You actually don't even have a chair. You're just sitting on a pile of money right now.
Yes.
You know? And
keep it off. I don't want to put it on camera. I don't want to make people feel bad.
But it's not that we don't want everyone to have that kind of lifestyle, but when you artificially create that by giving everyone a bunch of money and they just artificially have a bunch more money in their account that they didn't even have to earn, it was just brought to them somehow by the Biden stork or something like that. Well, they're not as price conscious when they go to buy stuff at a restaurant. Like you said, I didn't even pay attention to how much it was going to cost. I just ordered these two things.
Until he said the total.
And he said the total. You're like, oh, wow. That's good. But when people are more price conscious, the restaurants have to keep in mind that, well, people are going to notice when we raise our prices, you know? So we can't really raise them as fast as possible, as fast as we'd like to raise them. Because they'd always want to raise their prices.
Because in my head, it's still like 1997.
Mm-hmm.
And like you could go to a fast food place and get two meals for $10.
Yeah, that's not a thing.
No. No, not even close.
Yeah.
I was just shocked.
I still assume that a large Coke Zero at McDonald's is going to be a dollar.
Now it's like $2.19.
It's not a thing anymore. Uh-uh. All right, let's switch gears to the war real fast before we get out of here. I saw the story in the Washington Post and I was like, oh, okay, that's a story. That's kind of weird. And then I saw it again, the same kind of story from AP. And I was like, this is really weird. So this congresswoman, she was born and raised in Ukraine. She's a Ukrainian-born U.S. congresswoman. First one ever.
Yeah.
Okay? And she voted against aid for Ukraine. I mean, what kind of a stab in the back is that? They groom you and send you out to this country, and you don't even vote in favor? What just happened there? I don't know what that was all about. Okay, so let's talk about that. U.S. Representative Victoria Spartz, the first and only Ukrainian-born member of Congress, emerged early on.
Is she like a dual citizen or I'm not sure. Okay.
Emerged early on as a national advocate for supporting her native country in its war with Russia. But when $61 billion in additional support for the war effort came up for a vote in the House recently, she voted against it. Instead, she's called for better oversight of U.S. funds and opposed giving blank checks to the Ukrainian cause. She says U.S. border security should be a bigger priority. Spartz said she is kind of appalled at the notion that her heritage should dictate support for the Ukrainian cause if she feels the money would be wasted. She says, get this. She says, my responsibility is the protection of American people.
Huh.
She said during a recent interview.
But she basically said, I took an oath.
Yeah.
To protect and defend the Constitution.
To America.
Of the United States of America.
I have two articles here. And the crazy thing about both of these articles is that they are trying to tear her down for not doing this mythical duty that neither one of these articles question. And the mythical duty is that she should have came to America, swore an oath to defend the United States, and swore the oath to the U.S. Constitution, and then voted for whatever would help her homeland back in Ukraine. And neither one of these articles questions that idea. They're just like, oh, it's a terrible person.
Makes no sense. Like,
how does that, no one mentions this in the articles. It's so weird. So Washington Post says, a Ukraine-born congresswoman voted no on aid. Her hometown feels betrayed. I thought when someone left here and joined American Congress that they were going to do what we needed.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So they talk. I mean, this is a sad, sad, sad story. Small city north of Kyiv where she grew up. Locals once lauded her as one of their own, proud of the studious girl with blonde pigtails who moved to America and became the first Ukrainian-born member of Congress. But anyhow, she voted no. And then they even go back to like her school, where she was school number 15, where Spartz studied. They were talking to this teacher at that school saying that they're disappointed, they're frustrated. And at first they were proud of her and we thought she wanted to support us. But now we see the politics and careers are higher than our interests.
Yeah. Her interests are supposed
to
be American.
She's an American congresswoman. What are you talking about?
Nate's about to flip this
table.
Why
is this a question?
It's about to flip this table.
Yeah. It's just they even go into look how many students have been killed from the school that she attended and how many strikes have broken 80 the building lost 88 windows. Congresswoman Spartz.
They've got a museum.
Do your job.
To display evidence of the war collected by these students.
Anyhow, I just thought that was totally ridiculous that no one brought up the fact that she's a U.S. congresswoman and that these people are not supposed to be voting. Who's that guy, Menendez, I think, Bob Menendez or whatever, the one that was getting paid in gold from, I don't remember, was it Egypt or something? I can't remember which country it was, to basically help them vote in favor of whatever was in their best interest. And they were paying. It's a pretty smart scheme, honestly. I'm sure it's going on. Yeah. At least 100 different ways minimum in Congress. And like that was bad, but apparently it was only bad because they were exchanging money for it. It wouldn't have been bad if she just would have decided that this was her homeland.
Because she has loyalty to Ukraine and not to America as an America. And you know what's so weird about that is like there's a recent podcast that came out I thought was very interesting. It was two Arabs doing a podcast, and basically they were talking about how the Brotherhood of Islam has a long-term plan of infiltrating Western politics and then instituting Sharia law, essentially.
It's getting conspiratorial here. I like this.
Well, they were talking about it. It was two Arabs who were talking about their plan, essentially, on a podcast.
Yeah. So when we talk about stuff that white people are doing, it's probably right.
Yeah. And he was talking about how their brothers who are more of the jihad, think they have to do it by force, but they were like, we don't have to do it by force. We could just come in and win seats and then institute what we want. It's, think long term.
Yeah.
Imagine if that was imagine if that was Putin's plan.
It is. Haven't you ever heard of Marjorie Taylor Greene?
Send some people come over. On. have them run for Congress, back them, support their campaigns, get them elected, and then start voting for the interest of Russia or whatever the case may be. Like, this is so absurd to me.
But I guarantee it's common practice. There's like Tactical Warlock said, this is a commonplace thing. There's all kinds of interests that are doing this. The only people who don't do this actually are people who support freedom and liberty. Like, we don't organize well enough to slowly take over the United States and institute individual liberty for all the people in America. It's not like a long-term plan that anyone's working on, I don't think.
You know what else is interesting? Is she has a stronger backbone being from Ukraine than that guy who I think is real, Mike Johnson.
I heard of him.
Yeah.
I've seen his name.
That's the guy who said, not another penny for anyone else, basically. I'm here to support the border.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to secure the border first.
Yeah.
And then basically the second chance he gets.
Second chance.
Second chance he gets. Dude's like, we're going to definitely pass this aid to everybody else.
Let's get rid of him.
Yeah.
I want first Thomas of all, Massey to be
here's the real libertarian position. We have no money at all.
No, we don't.
We're negative. Okay. Mm-hmm. Our bank account is negative. Okay.
We have to borrow the money that we're going to send to other people.
Yes. But here's the thing. If we're going to spend the money, let's at least spend it here at home first. Like let's go into debt providing for our family.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, if you don't support Ukraine, then Russia's tanks are going to be rolling across the Rio Grande anytime. You got to keep that in mind too. That's so true. This is supporting our families. By not allowing Russia to waltz across the entire world.
Yeah. They're literally going to take paragliders over into Alaska, I bet.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
It's gonna, or do you think they'll come across the Atlantic?
They'll just go through
the Pacific.
Sarah Palin's backyard, probably. Mm-hmm. Just go right back through there.
Yeah.
So despite the Ukraine aid vote, this is from Max Boot. in the Washington Post. This is just a little sprinkle on top of our conversation. He says the neo-isolationist threat still looms. So even though we're helping Ukraine with $61 billion, actually like $40 billion of that is helping Lockheed Martin and Raytheon and Northrop Grumman and those people, but whatever.
If you total it up, it's been a couple hundred billion.
It's been way more than that. Yeah. Because those are all on 1995 prices. Anyhow, he says, even though we did this, we have an isolationist threat. Now, get this. This isolationist threat is Donald Trump. Mm. He's one of the... It went Ron Paul, and then we went to Donald Trump as the next isolationist threat that we
have. This guy looks just like Ayn Rand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just like her.
Yep.
So here's the idea. Since we have a threat that Donald Trump could potentially become the president again, this is the threat that everyone's identifying. It's possible that he might not want to continue giving Ukraine money. After all, he is a Putin plant in the first place, you know? And so in this article, they talk about how U.S. allies from Asia to Europe are talking about how to Trump-proof their alliances, but they will be very hard to do. That will be very hard to do given the carte blanche that U.S. presidents receive in foreign affairs. Congress did pass legislation to make it difficult for a president to pull out of NATO without congressional authorization, but Trump wouldn't have to formally leave the alliance to destroy it, as he could simply announce that he won't defend deadbeat allies.
Like deadbeat dads, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That is, in fact, what Trump's former national security advisor, John Bolton, who apparently the left loves now because he came out against Donald Trump, said that he would be. And the fact that John Bolton came out against Donald Trump makes me question whether or not Trump's actually way better on war than we think. But anyway, John Bolton predicts that this would happen if the disgraced former president, it's very important for a news organization to put that in there, mm-hmm. former president returns to office. They say that U.S. allies have, they're making contingency plans on the assumption. Oh,
government's good at that, yeah. Backup making plans, yeah.
Contingency plans,
yeah.
Yeah. So anyhow, the idea here is that they are trying to back up to solidify their support for Ukraine. And by that, we also mean, from this story right here, our teams, Ukraine and the United States, are currently working on a bilateral security agreement. We are already working on a specific text. Our goal is to make this agreement the strongest of all. We are discussing the specific foundations of our security and cooperation. We are also working on fixing specific levels of support for this year and for the next 10 years.
10 years!
Including arms support, financial, political, and joint arms production.
Oh my God.
And so the plan is right now is to sign into law an agreement with Ukraine where we agree that we are going to pay them and give them and help them with all of these things
for
over at least 10 years.
For a decade.
Because, you know, government does stuff in 10 years.
Yeah.
So
that way Trump can't reverse any of it.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Because then it would take an act of Congress to reverse what it would be become, you know, it's not going to be non-discretionary spending, you know. How's that make you feel?
Well, I was hoping to be shocked by it, but I'm not.
I was listening.
Just makes me feel these people are just so sleazy,
mm-hmm.
man. The back door dealing, wheeling and dealing in the back doors.
Yeah.
You know,
not the front door.
Under these bomb shelters.
Yeah, you go around to the other side of the buildings where there's...
Hell, Zelensky might be at Jekyll Island right now. You know, drafting up this plan
mm-hmm.
and drafting up backup plans for that.
Because
I guess it's, you know, I guess it's hard to assassinate presidents these days.
Apparently.
So
I don't know.
You know, with all the technology and video
I've
and
never
stuff,
tried myself, but...
I would never try it.
No.
I'm just saying...
I have no interest.
They might want to take Trump out, but since it's difficult to mm-hmm. do that... They're going to try to do other ways. This is just, you know, I don't know. The older I get, the more I'm not surprised by anything. And I just want to let them do it.
Yeah.
Just let them. The quicker we can get this thing to burn down.
Collapsitarianism.
The faster we can start over with liberty. You know, I was talking to a buddy of mine.
We have to make sure that we're the ones that are going to be deciding the future after that. Because you collapse it down. It's not a guarantee that freedom and liberty are what's going to emerge after that.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I was talking to my buddy who is, he's big in the crypto space, Kevin. Kevin's a good friend of mine, and I was talking to him about what's happening in the crypto space world. They're now going after...
Kevin's not here.
By the way, he's not in here. I don't see him. By the way, in the crypto world, they're now going after these software companies, and they are... The federal government is charging them with conspiracy to transmit money and conspiracy for money laundering and all kinds of things, which they're not doing. So it, essentially, the easiest way I can explain it is, you know, if you had two physical wallets, right, with physical money in them, let's say, and you took money out of one wallet and you put it in the other, okay? Well, remember, Bitcoin... which apparently, according to the government, is not real money, but they're treating it like real money because apparently if you digitally, if you use a service to help you digitally remove some Bitcoin from one wallet and place it into another wallet, even if you own both wallets, they're saying, and that company that's helping you, they never actually hold on to the Bitcoin ever. They're just servicing you. They're helping you move that money. That's money laundering. That's what the federal government's arguing. That's what Elizabeth Warren is arguing. And I told him, I was like, look, dude, I'm not surprised. But eventually these people are going to piss enough people off.
Yeah.
That liberty will rise again. That's the hope I have.
I hope so. I hope you're right about that.
Yeah. Might have to go through a little tyranny first. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's why you keep your gun sharp and your eyes pointed ahead.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know?
Welcome to all the new listeners who've never heard us before. This was a spectacular episode. We're so glad that you were here. I was going to play this Ayn Rand clip, but I don't feel like it.
No, I want to hear it.
It's not really that. I just thought it was interesting. I was listening to this morning, and they started talking about Vietnam. Okay, now this is when the war in Vietnam is still going on. Okay?
And Charlie was everywhere.
Yeah, say Vietnam's a good shrimp, but... You know, that she was not in favor of the war. And that's actually where she got a bunch of applause in the audience. Now, Johnny Carson, I believe, is who was interviewing her. I think so. Anyhow, comes back and says, well, what about the people who say, if we don't go over there and fight them, that they're going to march all the way through Asia and take over Asia. And then eventually we'll be fighting them here on our doorstep in America. Vietnam. That was the argument.
Vietnam.
That was what they were telling people when it came to the Vietnam War, which so many people were against, that they were going to take over Asia and grow so powerful that eventually we'd be fighting Vietnam on our own doorstep. And if you better fight them over there, that way you don't have to fight them over here. And it's so crazy to me that almost 60 years later, 56 years later after this was recorded, people still use the exact same arguments. Well, if you don't do this, Russia's just going to march all the way through Europe and become a bigger world superpower. And then they're going to be rolling across the Rio Grande and we'll be fighting them over here if you don't stop them right there in Ukraine where they stand.
By the way, Russia used to be closer. They had missiles set up in Cuba. Okay. Yeah. They weren't far away. Back in during the Cold War.
Probably still got some hanging around pretty close.
Yeah.
But anyway, we don't actually have to play the video. We don't really have enough time before we come to this break and hear the music going. That means it's time to take a short bathroom break.
Protection. Eleutheromania. The insatiable desire for freedom. Filibuster. Police state. It's the new 3-song heavy metal EP from Captain Kickass. Available now on your favorite music app or get it directly from CaptainKickass.com.
Free Talk Live. What's up, all of our liberty-loving friends? This is another fantastic episode of Liberty at Night with Nate and Charlie on the Free Talk Live Network, coming at you from Nashville, Tennessee. I am joined by Benjamin Iannian, who's a commentator for Young Voices. Ben, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me back on.
So one thing we have here today to talk about is a spending package that just sort of, I don't know, flew under the radar. I don't know if people know this, but the government almost shut down. We almost had mayhem around the entire United States. We did luckily find a way to continue funding the government and spend a whole bunch more money that we don't actually have. And you wrote a piece about that. And why don't you tell us some of the details of this? There's, you know, you say the bad, the ugly, and the worst. You didn't say good in any of this. What are some of those bad and ugly things that happened?
Yeah, so as you just pointed out, the title of the article I wrote is The Bad, the Ugly, and the Worst of the Spending Package. Most people look at, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly. I didn't think there was much good at all worth talking about. So Congress did, you know, avert a partial government shutdown by passing a $1.2 trillion spending package. The media, this is one of my biggest gripes with the, you know, the whole event, is that the media, you know, characterized passing this bill as long overdue. Different politicians like Chuck Schumer said that it was exemplary of completing the job, you know, passing this spending package, which really just grinds my gears as someone who advocates for limited government and fiscal responsibility. And, you know, Democrats and Republicans get to go to their bases and tout their couple of victories without talking about all of the bad things that they believe the other side got in this $1.2 trillion package as well. And so it's a great opportunity for politicians to push propaganda on voters. Hey, look what I got passed for you guys without talking about all the terrible stuff that was in the bill they voted for as well. And so I'll start with the bad, and then we can discuss that a little bit. So the bad of this bill, or now law, signed into law, in my view, was the actual contents. And the biggest problem in it, I think, what we should focus on are the earmarks in these bills. So earmarks are just funding, basically, that different representatives, people in Congress can basically get dibs on federal funding for pet projects in their districts, right? And so they get to take federal funding and push it towards their constituents, really, is how earmarks work. And there were a couple of really, really odd earmarks. Now, all of them are bad, I would argue. Why is federal funding going to specific state pet projects at all? But a couple of them, just to highlight, you know, how ridiculous earmarks can be. $850,000 went to a New Jersey housing development specifically for LGBTQ plus seniors, and $400,000 also went to an organization that creates a handful of services, but one of which is gender affirming clothing for trans youth. Now, I'm not making any comment on the social issues at hand here. That's not what I'm necessarily trying to get at here. But the point is, regardless how you feel about these social issues, whether you know support the activity that these groups are engaging in or you don't support it, I think we should all agree that taxpayer dollars should not be stolen and handed off to these special interest groups. If you as an individual want to support these sorts of projects, donate your own money to it, right? That it's your money. You can do whatever you want with it. Politicians should not be forcing this sort of spending on everybody else, the taxpayer base as a whole. And so, you know, Republicans also, you know, they put in earmarks. Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia, she secured just under $4 million in federal funding for an airport expansion in Dade County, Georgia. Regardless of how you feel about the airport, why are federal tax dollars going to an expansion of an airport in the state of Georgia? That it's not necessary. And if you thought Republicans were going to save the day outside of Marjorie Taylor Greene and push back on government spending, unfortunately, you were wrong. The GOP was far more focused on banning LGBTQ pride flags from being flown outside of U.S. embassies. They thought that that was more important than rolling back spending. They did not stop $200 million that's now allocated to a shiny new headquarters for the FBI in the state of Maryland. So now the FBI can more comfortably spy on and harass American citizens. Glad to see Republicans are really looking out for us. And they also heavily supported a $27.5 billion raise above current funding for the Department of Defense even though the DOD has failed all of its audits. It's 6 years in a row they haven't passed an audit, yet the Republican Party wants to give the DOD and the Pentagon a massive raise. And so I think that the contents of the bill were the bad of, you know, of the bad, ugly, and the worst.
Well, I mean, judging by the things that you picked out, I would surmise that you don't care about our troops. You like domestic terrorists and you hate gay people. Those are the that's my critique of you. Welcome to the news.
Yeah, that's exactly how the discourse goes these days. People, what I find interesting, and I know that you've probably had many conversations about this, the discussions that are had in the media and in public discourse all turn into, as you just made a some satire about, they all turn into moral issues. And the idea is, if you don't support taxpayer funding of something, that means you hate whatever people that money is going to. And it's really unfortunate that no one just takes a step back and takes an overview and says, you know, okay, regardless of how we feel about the object of these spending, is it the proper role of government? I think that's the conversation that needs to be had more.
Now, why do we get bills like this? Or why is all of this included in one bill that we had to sign to avert a partial government shutdown? It seems like if you want to avert a partial government shutdown, you would just decide to fund whatever things are at risk of getting shut down, and then we'll have some separate bills to discuss whether or not the federal government should give $850,000 towards senior housing for LGBTQ plus seniors or something like that. And if it's important to the people, then the people's representatives will vote on this. Isn't that how it's supposed to work?
It should. And unfortunately, I think the reality is that our politicians don't really work a whole lot. I mean, they're there. I mean, they're in DC a decent amount, but they don't do a ton of work. Some of them do. Some of them really care about the issues. They're not just collecting a paycheck. I would say that those individuals are very few and far between. I'll say a couple of names. Thomas Massey, I think, is a great person to follow. Rand Paul is pretty good on a lot of issues. Hopefully Justin Amash will mm-hmm. find his way into the Senate. He's currently running in Michigan right now. So there's a few politicians out there who really, they give a crap and they really look at all the issues. They advocate for better governance. Problem is, a lot of politicians are really there for the power. They're there for the dinner parties. They're there for the paycheck and getting to stand on their soapbox instead of actually doing work. And so a lot of these spending bills are negotiated by party leadership in back rooms. The bills are then released to everyone in Congress, really normally less than 2 days before they're supposed to be voted on. And these bills are over 1,000 pages. I mean, very few of these politicians, I would argue none, even the ones that you like, are not going to get through, 1,000 to 1,500 pages in 30 hours to look at all of the nitty gritty details. And even if they did, they would find so much that they don't like that they would vote no. Mm-hmm. It's a terrible process. We should have single issue spending bills. We should not be funding the entire government and all the pet projects everybody wants 1 to 2 times a year, right? This should be that all of these things should be broken up. And oddly enough, the government would probably not be allowed to spend as much money if they did that, because then if you had debate, if you had to spend time voting on all of these separate issues, you probably wouldn't be able to lump this many different objects within a spending bill. And so, the government likes to grow. It likes to, hold on to power. And so it is, they have an incentive to do it this way, because they don't have to work as much and they get to spend more money.
Now, I thought that Republicans were really big on having time to read the bills also. I mean, this is a 1,000-page document. It's not even a book. It's a legal document, and much of it refers back to previous parts of the document. You got to go back and say, well, what was 1C, the F, whatever, you know, whatever that was. And it probably takes a lot of time to run through it. It's not like this is a page-turner or anything for people to go through. And they had the 72-hour rule that I thought Republicans were pretty big on, but they waived that for this bill too.
Yeah, Republicans, push for a 72-hour rule where everybody would be able to have 72 hours. It's just how the rule sounds. 72 hours to read the bill before it would be voted on. Now, 72 hours still isn't a ton, especially when you have congressional hearings, when these, individuals, they have, different events or obligations that they have to go to. It's not like they could just lock themselves in a room for 72 hours, but at least you could get through a lot of these bills in, 72 hours. Unfortunately, Mike Johnson, Speaker of the House, a Republican that Republicans fought for, he waived the 72-hour rule, which was a huge slap in the face to all of the Republicans that wanted to see better governance come to fruition under his leadership. He waived the rule, and many Republicans were upset. People who are as different as Marjorie Taylor Greene and Justin Amash. Marjorie Taylor Greene is, I'm not saying I like this term, but at least you know what I'm saying if I say this term. She's a quote-unquote MAGA Republican. And then Justin Amash is a libertarian, right? And both of them agreed that this was a huge slap in the face. Marjorie Taylor Greene actually began the process of trying to remove Mike Johnson as speaker, and Justin Amash supported it publicly. He said that we should continue to oust speakers until one of them finally gets it. And at this point, that's probably the only way we're going to get better governance. It was really sad to see Mike Johnson break his 72-hour promise. And he also had a deal last summer. Thomas Massey, I believe, pointed this out at one point on Twitter, if you guys want to find a politician talking about it. But as part of a debt limit deal, I believe it was last summer, Biden agreed to a 1% cut in all discretionary spending if they were still using what are called continuing resolutions to fund the government as of April 30th, 2024. If they were still using continuing resolutions, then he agreed there would be a 1% automatic cut in all discretionary spending. Mike Johnson totally gave up that leverage and pushed this bill through the House and didn't have the spending cuts we wanted to see. Republicans were really big on border security. They did not get border security wins in this bill. Now, I know libertarians, for example, there's a huge disagreement about how to, handle the border. And I think that there's actually really healthy debate going on within the Libertarian Party about what that policy should look like. But I just want to point out that was another thing Republicans wanted, whether, we like it or not is irrelevant. The point is that Mike Johnson gave up so much leverage that the Republicans had and pushed this bill through.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy that they gave up all that leverage. Do you think, speculating here, but why would Mike Johnson not want to push it to this 1% cut on discretionary spending? And Republicans are always talking about how we have to cut the budget, how we have to spend less money. You're talking 1%, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it's significant in relation to all of the cuts that never happen to spending. So why wouldn't Mike Johnson want to do that? Is that political implications, election 2024, stuff like that?
I think the behavior we've seen from Mike Johnson over the last month has shown that political forces are really influencing his decision making. For example, he helped push through the FISA bill, which now which reiterated that the government can spy on American communications through the FISA program without a warrant. Right? Why would Mike Johnson suddenly, you know, be a supporter of this? Who knows who's talking to this guy? Who knows what bureaucrats have his ear? But somehow he's become convinced that these bills that expand the power and the scope, not just the size, but also the scope of government, he's become convinced that they need to be passed even without broad support from his own party in the House of Representatives. It's really head scratching. I wish I had, you know, a crystal clear explanation for it, but in my mind, it has to be political in some sense.
You know, we can criticize these politicians all day and they deserve it. They deserve more of it, more than likely, but really it comes down to the people, because my guess would be someone told Mike Johnson, hey, if you don't sign this FISA thing and there's some kind of an attack, then this is going to be blamed on you and you're not going to win another election. And Republicans are going to be blamed for whatever happens in this attack. If you cut 1% of all of the spending, the news cycle is going to be, oh, look how many less meals on wheels we had this year. These people don't have any food. They're going to go to every single sad case that they can find. The politicians see that and they say, well, I want to win re-election, but who is it that's voting for them? It's the people. And so really, it's on the people to have the right principles and to have the proper understanding of why, even if an attack happens, well, it's not right for the government to be spying on everyone. That's the cost of freedom. This person didn't get the same government funding this year. Well, that's the cost of not stealing more money from people against their will and inflating the way our currency. Like, you should have the moral principles to be able to see this and have it not affect your vote afterwards. And so I always go back to something, one of my favorite things that Milton Friedman said was that you don't have to change the politicians. The politicians will do whatever the people that keep them in office tell them to do. You want to change the people.
Yeah, it's a great, I'm so glad that you brought up that Milton Friedman point, because it's such a great quote. He pointed out, as you said, that we need to change the incentive structure, which is, yes, what do people think? Are they informed? What are they knowledgeable about? He's famously said that, you know, we've tried putting the right people in office and that hasn't worked. The right people, once they get in office, become the wrong people. And it's important for us to make it, I'm not trying to say these are just my words, because I actually might be quoting him, but he said that we need to make it politically profitable for the wrong people to do the right thing.
That's it for word for word right there.
Is it really? Yeah, oh my gosh. Okay. Well, I'll give myself a pat on the back, there I guess, for that one. But it's one of my all-time favorite quotes. I'm so glad that you brought it up, because it's really important for individuals to be informed about this stuff. Now, there's a couple of problems we run into, and you can stop me if you don't want to get too much into the weeds on this. But first, right, we have a chicken and the egg problem, okay? Are we going to have people who basically push the government to become more responsible, more freedom-loving, or is it going to start with a figure? Not like, we should never put our hope behind an individual person, but, or is it going to be a couple of politicians, right? Let's say Justin Amash wins his election. Let's say Thomas Massie, you know, stays in office for a long time. Rand Paul, you know, he's not quite Ron, right? I know everybody loves Ron, but Rand Paul is very good on a lot of issues. Again, he's definitely not Ron, but he is very good on a lot of issues. These individuals, maybe there could become a cohort of individuals. Chip Roy is okay on some issues, for sure. He's pushed for more responsible government. They could push these ideas, and then individuals could latch on to the ideas, right? And then people could, you know, change other politicians. So we have a chicken and an egg problem of where is it going to come from? And the second problem, right, that's attached to that, is the lack of incentive for individuals to be informed, right? And so that's where I think it almost has to come from a group of politicians first. Like, maybe we get our own Javier Milei, you know, in the United States, the Argentinian president. But because there's a great book called Now, I'm not advocating for the title, right? It's the book is a thought experiment called Against Democracy by Jason Brennan, right? It's just a thought experiment. He's not saying to tear down democracy, and I'm not saying to tear down democracy. But it's a great thought experiment about the good and the bad parts of democracy. What would an alternative system look like, and why do we have problems with our current system? He doesn't say we should change our system. It's just an honest examination. And the idea is there is so much that the government does. There are so many stories, so many issues. And on top of that, as a voter, right? Not only do you have a life, right? You have a job. You have hopefully, you know, family and friends. On top of that, right? Your vote, the odds that you break a tie are next to zero. You have a better chance of getting struck by lightning twice. And so the idea is, is the incentive structure great for people to be informed? I know this is a little pessimistic, but I don't think the incentive structure is great for people to be informed. And so what we need are a couple of I think we need individuals, right, who care about public policy to basically put these pro-liberty ideas out more, right? I don't think people are exposed to them enough between Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, all of these news networks, and even go to the Wall Street Journal, right? New York Times, Washington Post. There's not a lot of libertarian ideas in these papers. There's some on economics in the Wall Street Journal, but not a whole lot. George Will in the Washington Post put some forward, but that's one guy. So the point is, I think we need an intellectual movement, you know, for the pro-liberty stance. I'm not advocating for intellectual capture. I think bottom-up movements are fantastic, but we need pro-liberty ideas in higher education institutions. We need them in mainstream media. And yes, we need people running for office who hold these views to push these views so that then people become more informed of them. And then I think you'll see more of a bottom-up growth. But I do think it has to start with the people who are already really entrenched in like the pro-liberty movement, if that makes sense.
All right, folks, so get my response to what Ben Ianian just said. One of my favorite guests that we ever have on the show, Ben. Good job, Ben. You'll get my response to what he just said when we get back. Remember, Good Morning Liberty is our daily podcast where we have 1,225 episodes, a new episode every single day of the week. Be right back.
This hour of Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash, Digital Cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. In addition to being one of the world's first cryptocurrencies, Dash was the first crypto project to have a decentralized autonomous organization that to this day continues to improve and promote Dash. Every month, 10% of the mining rewards go into a treasury. Anyone with one Dash to spend can put forward a proposal to the Dash Masternodes. The Masternodes vet the proposals and decide which ones move forward and are funded by that treasury. Nowadays, DAOs are plentiful, but Dash paved the way by doing it first, nearly a decade ago. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges, including the decentralized Maya protocol, and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get and use Dash. Start by learning more at Dash.org. Thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. Visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. Dash.org.
All right, before the break, our guest Benjamin Ianian was saying that we need a new revolutionary figure going around talking to people in the United States. I wonder if it takes something bad happening to get people's attention. Argentina having 200% inflation, and they end up listening to Javier Milei, and they could probably quote more Mises than I could. I wonder if, relatively speaking, we just have it pretty good here in the U.S., and so we think that we can keep running up the credit card, and why not? It's not really affecting us that much. There was some inflation, but they also gave me some money, so it's evens out in the wash. And I wonder if it's going to take something, you know, with the Ron Paul movement, him filling up arenas. We had the housing crash. We had the bank bailouts. I unfortunately think a lot of the Ron Paul people in those arenas turned out to be Bernie bros later on because they were actually just upset about the bank bailouts. And that was their big thing that they were mad about. But a lot of people were exposed to that message. We need an intellectual, we need an economic Jordan Peterson that people will go and listen to for three. We need Milton Friedman going around to college campuses and talking for an hour or two in a civil way. I'm, you know, not Ben Shapiro going to college campuses and there being protests, but we need a new Milton Friedman, a new Ayn Rand. We need people like that out there. Free to Choose needs to have a new Milton Friedman out there going around the campuses talking to people. I don't know who that person is yet. You got any ideas?
I'm not sure who that person is either, but I think you hit the nail on the head. Milton Friedman had an uncanny ability to speak to a room of people who weren't experts on economics. Now, I don't think economics is a particularly complicated subject, and it's not. It's the media says it is, and people want you to think that it is, right? What we think of economics these days is not how I like to think of economics. You know, numbers, you know, a lot of equations, measuring GDP, this, that, and the other. What I think is most important is understanding the basic principles of economics. Thomas Sowell wrote a great book called Basic Economics. I highly recommend reading it. It's super long though. So Economics in One Lesson by Henry Hazlitt. It was written in the early 20th century, but it's much shorter and it's a great book about the basic economic principles. Milton Friedman wrote Capitalism and Freedom. So that's another great book to learn the principles of economics. And we need someone like Milton Friedman to go out in the world and discuss the basic principles of economics. Now, I love talking about economics. I write on economics. I go on podcasts, TV shows. I speak about economics. I don't have an economics degree. I am not an economist. I don't think that that's necessary to do what Milton Friedman did. I don't quite have the same, you know, I think really special God-given like ability that he had, but what we might not have a Milton Friedman right now that we see, but what we need are individuals who come on shows like these, right? You know, you interview a lot of libertarian-minded individuals. I mean, the show is called Good Morning Liberty. You're, you know, a libertarian-minded individual. You understand the basic principles of economics. We need people like, you know, show hosts like you. We need commentators, people like me, other people at Young Voices. We need professors who are libertarian-minded to speak up. We need, maybe we don't have that iconic figure, and maybe that iconic figure will arise, but we need a group effort until that happens because it's just too important to let this continue on, or we will end up in a, you know, Javier Milei, you know, Argentina situation.
You know, speaking on economics, you were saying like, you know, people say it's super complicated, but it really isn't. It's just talking about how human beings react to incentive structures that are in front of, that's all it is. It's not like libertarians or free market economists know the future or have a crystal ball, but it's common sense how human beings are going to react. And all these people who think about planned economies and that they can change the outcomes, they're basically saying that they can override millions to billions of human beings and how they're naturally going to react to the incentives in front of them. And that's why they end up being wrong most of the time. You know, people react to the incentive structure that's laid out in front of them.
It's so important. Thomas Sowell is one of those figures. Thomas Sowell's still alive. Now, he's close to 100 years old. Yeah. So he's not quite as active as he once was, although he had a book come out relatively recently. The guy's written like a million bajillion books. He's fantastic. He had that same sort of ability that Milton Friedman had to discuss these sorts of principles with people. Don't listen to the media. Don't listen to politicians who tell you that economics is super complicated and that you don't understand it. It's all about principles. Forget the numbers. Truly. Sure, if the inflation hits double digits, be concerned, right? Understand that those sorts of numbers. But generally speaking, if you have the inclination to learn about economics, it's all about principles. It's all about understanding what effect certain policies will have on individuals in society. The economy is not this machine that we can go in with wrenches and screwdrivers and get it to run exactly how we want. It's an organic creature, right? It is made up of the decisions of hundreds of millions of individuals in the United States and all the people that we work with, trade with, contract with around the world. That's what makes up the economy. It's people. It's not politicians. It's not numbers. It's the freedom to contract. It's the price system. It's, you know, the buying and selling of goods and services. That's what the economy is. All you have to do is learn the principles of it, and public policy discussions will become so much easier, really, to dissect as just an average consumer of news.
And it feels like a really great time to talk quickly about your book. Why don't you tell everyone about that?
I just released a book. The e-version, the Kindle version, has been up since April 3rd, but the paperback just got released last week. It's titled Beyond Intention, How Progressive Economic Policy Initiatives Would Harm Society's Most Vulnerable. I know it's a bit of a mouthful. The second part's just a subtitle, though. So Beyond Intention is about the most hotly debated progressive economic policy initiatives, right? I picked a handful of them, from raising the minimum wage to enacting rent control. I also discussed free higher education. Progressives want free college and universities. They also want Medicare for all, and they want wealth taxes, right? So those were the five that I focus on there. I take readers through each of those policies one by one in their own separate chapter, discussing why do progressives want to implement these policies? You know, what issue are they trying to combat? Right? What data are they seeing that tells them this is a necessary policy? Right? Who are they trying to help? And then I discuss, okay, what do basic economic principles tell us about how these policies would work in effect? And then I look at real world data to show that, in fact, these policies don't fix the problem progressives are trying to attack. Instead, they actually hurt the most vulnerable members of society even worse. And at the end of each chapter, I also give an alternative policy proposal to fix the original issue that progressives were looking at. I'm sure you can guess, it's a free market oriented alternative solution in all five chapters. But I really hope you guys check it out.
For sure. And this is such an important topic that you're writing on, because I happen to believe that a lot of these people who push for these policies, I try to look on the bright side and think that they truly do want to help people and they truly do care about people, you know. And I wonder what they would change about what they're advocating for if they truly understood that these policies do not help the people that they're trying to help, that they're actually hurting the people that they're trying to help. And I mean, if they really, truly came to that understanding, would they still be pushing for these policies? Because maybe some, we can look at the government and say, well, they're pushing for this because they want to increase their tax base or they want to help this corporation or that corporation. But a lot of people on the ground, they care about these things because they care about the poor and they want to help them. And so it's very important for them to understand that that's not what they're doing, even if that's what the intentions are. You got to go beyond the intentions and actually look at what you're doing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You're 100% right. I think differentiating between the politicians and the voters, let's say, who support these policies, I think that's a really salient point to make that you just made. So the politicians have their special interest groups. They're beholden to other forces that, you know, we don't like, that we don't know about. I like to think at least some of them believe what they're saying. Like AOC is a really young person, right? She's a millennial. I think she's a millennial. Lina Khan is a millennial, the head of the FTC, right? I think that they probably believe what they're saying. I know Elizabeth Warren was a very big, I think she's a very big political activist for a long time. I know Hillary Clinton was a political activist for a long time. She's not quite the same bold of progressive that the other ones I discussed were. But the point is that some politicians might believe at least most of what they're saying. Some believe none of what they're saying, and it's just a power grab. Bureaucrats, particularly a lot, and there's some good bureaucrats out there. Like, there's some good people who just want to help. There's other individuals that just want to rise up the ranks and have a high power position in the government, in a government where there is more power. But the voters, 100%, if they are not, let's say, gaining anything outside of maybe social acceptance from peers who look, who think how they think, not look, peers who think how they think, and also a good feeling on their insides that they're fighting for what's righteous and just, right? If that's all they're gaining out of it, I think it's safe to say that the voters, those voters truly believe what's being sold to them by the propagandists in government. And so you and I have had discussions on this podcast before about, should libertarians be focusing on pushing principles, right, or pushing results of policy? And both are equally important, because if people don't understand the principles, even if you enact those policies, even if you get good results for a while, it might not be enduring, right? If people don't truly understand why those policies are working, it might not be enduring. And so that's why I try to do both. I look at the basic principles in my book, you know, so more, economic theory, stuff, you know, the principles of basic economics. And then I look at the results, because I think that if we want to, let's say, convert, quote unquote, progressives, right, or just Democrats, or even middle, you know, the middle of the political spectrum, to pro-liberty ideas, I think the hook has to be the results, right? If you just tell them, we love freedom, we want people to make their own decisions, I mean, they've heard that before, and they think that, well, I don't like their decisions, right? You know, I don't support that. But I think that's what they would say. I think that if we start with, here's the results of the policies you support, and here's the results of the freedom policies that we support, I think then they might be on the hook at that point. And then they might dive a little bit deeper into the issues, and they might start to learn how these pro-liberty principles are actually there's a great moral argument for them. And mm-hmm. I think that they could then, you know, grasp onto that. But it's my view that to get the people on the fence and far away from the fence to hop over the other side, I think it has to start with the results of policy to get them interested. But that's just my two cents.
So Ben, tell everyone where they can go to keep up with you.
Yeah, you guys can find me on Twitter at Benjamin Iyanian, and you can also find me on Instagram at BIyanian13. And thanks again, Nate, for having me on. All you listeners, as you know, it's a fantastic show. Keep tuning in. I really enjoy coming on.
All right. We love having Ben on the show. Going to have him on a lot more times. I think that was the third time so far. Let's switch over now. We're going to shift gears in the middle of this segment over to Dumb Bleep of the Week. Dumb Bleep of the Week is where we have all of the live group members, the Fed Haters Club, who join by going to joingmail.com. They put in submissions, and then they get to vote on what the dumbest thing said in politics was for the past week. Dumb Bleep! Number one is Joe Biden. It's a whole category of Joe Biden doing dumb things. We have this video that I played yesterday on the show. Charlie, I know you've seen the video also, but it deserves to be played once again. This is a video of Joe Biden giving a speech. They have put a pause on his teleprompter, and he reads the pause out loud as he's giving a speech. People start chanting, probably because they were paid to start chanting before the show. And so they start chanting. They fulfill their contractual obligations to do that. Here's what that sounded like.
Imagine what we can do next. Four more years. Pause.
Four more years. Four more years.
Imagine.
All right.
Pause. Tell them to pause.
Now that's dumb in itself. And I talked about this yesterday. Not only that he read, you realize when he reads the pause, that just kind of tells you he has no clue what's going on. He doesn't know what he just said, why he's reading certain words, what exactly it is that he's saying or the ideas that he's trying to convey to the people that are listening. No clue. Although he's the president and in some polls is still leading. And that's the guy.
To be fair, though, other people have made teleprompter mistakes.
They have.
Yeah.
They have. That's why this specific thing is not the entire idea of this dumb bleep. You see, the White House put out a transcript of this speech. They word for word what Joe Biden said. I mean, even when people started chanting, the audience started chanting. So Biden says, folks, imagine what we can do next. Four. And then audience member, inaudible. And then the president, more years, inaudible. Audience, four more years, four more years, four more years.
So they put his pause as inaudible.
Yeah. You just couldn't understand what it was that he said at all. Mm-mm. So this kind of thing is the part that actually bothers me, because here's your historical transcript record of the speech that occurred. And what do? They go in here. He made a flub. He said the wrong word. And it's not that they're just putting the transcript of the speech out there like, oh, this is us posting the official transcript of his speech. Yeah, he wasn't supposed to say pause, but that's not part of the speech, whatever. They actually put what audience members said, the order in which this happened, says four, and then people start saying stuff, then he says more years, then people start saying, but they leave out the fact that he said pause. Uh-huh. It's a lie. We're sticking on number one. We're going to brush by a couple things that we already talked about.
This is all about Biden.
Sheets discriminated against Black, Native American, and multiracial job seekers by weeding out applicants whom the company deemed to have failed a criminal background check. And now the Equal Employment Opportunity, whatever, commission, EEOC, another agency, is going after Sheets for discrimination. Even though they say that Sheets has not intentionally discriminated against him, and what did they do? They have a requirement that you got to pass this criminal background check before they let you come work around their other employees and their customers and deal with money and product. And so if you ask for someone to pass a criminal background check and it disproportionately affects people who are minorities,
who are criminals,
this is discrimination. This is kind of codifying the idea that if something has a disparate outcome, a disproportionate outcome, that is discrimination, which is then a gateway to all sorts of pain and suffering for humanity.
Regardless of people's personal choices.
Mm-hmm. What you did.
And this kind of, you know, I know Ben Shapiro got in a lot of hot water. This was probably 10 years ago when he was talking about that debate he did where he said, you tell me why, you know, Black people make up 13%
that.
Of the population yet commit 50% of the violent crime. And so it's like, okay, well, if you're breaking the law, if you're a criminal, now some of that may be unfair. I get that. You know, the whole drug war we disagree with, and there could be potentially more minorities that are caught up in the drug war.
It's actually an economic argument is what it is. Typically, poorer people are going to be more likely to be criminals.
Yes.
That get caught and prosecuted and in prison. The other ones.
The rich white cocaine users.
Yeah, they get nice lawyers. Like
Taylor Swift. Know? They're fine.
They're fine. Yeah. Even rich Black people can get off too. Just ask OJ.
Yeah.
I mean, God didn't let him off the hook.
Well,
but you know.
Can't ask him now.
Yeah. Can't ask him now because justice was served, but you know the thing. All right, we got to keep moving, though, because there's a lot of stuff. We're still number one about Joe Biden. He says, just a couple days ago, he says Donald Trump was very proud of his $2 trillion tax cut.
That's not how he said it, though.
No. Well,
Donald Trump was very proud of that tax cut, $2
trillion. $130 billion. Overwhelmingly, he said that the tax cut overwhelmingly benefited the wealthy and the biggest corporations and exploded the federal debt. That tax cut is going to expire. If I'm reelected, it's going to stay expired. Okay.
That's the key point right there.
Here's the point. Here's why this is a dump. He has spent a lot of time. He has said, I don't know how many times now, that he will not raise taxes on anyone who is making over $400,000 a year. Unless you count inflation as a tax, but
making
whatever.
Less than $400,000.
Less,
a year.
Sorry. Yeah. Less. Thank you. Then less than $400,000 a year.
Less is more. Yeah.
Do
less.
You know what I mean? So.
He might have actually said that, though.
This is what happens when you spend years telling a lie about a tax cut, is that you can still get away with this, even though this tax cut actually gave more of a tax cut to people who were making less. What they have been telling people, see, it's important that we talked about this, I think, quite a bit last week or the week before, whenever it was. What they've been telling people is that the rich have overwhelmingly seen most of the benefits from these tax cuts. And that's because in dollars, of course, they have seen most of the benefits from these tax cuts. But these tax cuts were tax cuts across the board for each income quintile or decile or however it is that they do it for everyone. And in fact, what they saw was that taxes came down more on a percentage decrease basis for people on the lower end of the income spectrum. But since they've hammered the idea that the tax cuts overwhelmingly benefited the rich because they talk about it in dollar form, he can come out here and say, he literally just tweeted, I'm going to raise taxes on everyone. Mm-hmm. That's what he just tweeted. This tweet says, you know all those times I said I wasn't going to raise taxes on people making less than $400,000 a year? That was a lie. All of you are going to get your taxes raised. That's what that tweet says right there.
Yeah. Well, he's not going to like raise them though.
No, no, he's going to
let the cuts.
He's going to let the cut expire, which was also nice that, you know, Trump maybe planned on winning re-election and the tax cuts were going to expire a year after he would have gotten out of office if he would have, you know, won in 2020.
Yeah.
It's always great how they do stuff like that. You know, that's great. Let's stay on Joe Biden still right now. The Biden Treasury Department says we need higher taxes on capital gains because it would hurt white people more and take away their wealth. Whites own too many stocks and businesses, so they need to pay. Now, I read that. I'm like, okay, this person's clearly lying. No one said that. There's no way that they made this case from the Treasury Department at all. It's that people just started talking this week about the capital gains rate that he talked and the unrealized thing. Like, it just happened. Like, this budget came out a month ago or a little more. Like, we talked about it a ton when it first came out. And I don't know if he mentioned something about it or what it was, but people are just now catching up to what was in this White House budget. They say while federal individual income tax taken as a whole is progressive, meaning that it reduces income inequality, some elements of the tax code exacerbate differences in income and wealth accumulation by different racial groups, leading to greater inequality. For example, the Treasury estimates that 92% of the benefits of the tax expenditure for preferential rates on capital gains and qualified dividends accrued to white families. Only 2% of the tax expenditure accrued to black families and 3% to Hispanic families. A similar share of benefits of the tax expenditure for the deduction for income, pass-through businesses accrue to each group. What they essentially make as an argument in this is that capital gains accrue to white people way more than they accrue to minorities, and therefore this is exacerbating racial income inequality. And in fact, raising the capital gains tax rate is a good way to tax white people to reduce racial income inequality and racial wealth inequality. And therefore, one of the arguments behind raising the capital gains tax rate to the top rate would be 44%, if anyone's concerned about that, is that it would mostly affect white people and not other minorities. So anyhow, there's that argument for you as we move. That was all number one. It's called Joe Biden and the Voting Channel, by the way.
Joe Biden number one.
That could have been its own dumb bleep. We could have spent an entire episode talking about each one of those things.
And there's more that Joe Biden said.
Oh, yeah. There's
recently.
There's several more things. Like I said, I've seen
other gaffes that he had this week, too. It's pretty ridiculous.
It's been a rough year for him, and especially a week. All right, we got a lot more coming up on Dumb Bleep of the Week. That was only Dumb Bleep number one, so we have a lot more stuff to go through. And if you want to get your vote in, go to joingml.com.
Free Talk Live.
It's Dumb Bleep of the Week on Liberty Unite on the Free Talk Live Network. Charlie, just in case you're wondering, I know that this is near and dear to your heart. Climate change has a bigger impact on LGBTQ plus couples than straight couples. So if it's been Climate Week or whatever, we had Earth Day, where you're supposed to care about the Earth this week. And they want you to know, like, I know you're worried about climate change, but here's a reason to be worried about it. It has way bigger impact on LGBTQ plus people. Okay. Yeah. It has a disproportionate. Climate change is actually bigoted, you know, against the letter people. Yeah. You know,
Recently someone was diagnosed with issues related to climate
change. Came down with climate change. Yeah.
They, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, this person looked to be about 600 pounds.
I saw that pose, yeah.
But
came down a little bit of climate change.
Yeah.
Other than that, perfectly healthy.
Yes.
Read some stuff.
All right. Same-sex couples are at a greater risk of climate change-related threats than their heterosexual peers, a new study has found.
No, it hasn't. Just so you know. No, it hasn't.
God. Because LGBTQ, SAI, LMNOP plus people disproportionately live in coastal areas and cities, as well as areas with poorer infrastructure and less access to resources, they are more vulnerable to climate hazards, according to a report from the Williams Institute at UCLA School of Law. What are they studying at the School of Law?
So what they do in this study is they take like all, here's all of the letter people, and you got all the letter people, and you say, well, where do a percentage of them live? You say, well, a lot of them live around coastal cities because they got to wear like their thongs and stuff, you know, Speedos and all that.
Yeah.
Where else are you going to wear a Speedo? You got to go to like Miami and stuff like that. And so they're like, well, there's a greater percentage of them that live there. Now, what they don't do is say, okay, well, if you look at the coastal areas, are a greater percentage of the people who live in the coastal area letter people, or is it more heterosexual people that live there? Actually, what you'd find is that statistically, way more of the people who live around the coast are not gay. And so therefore, whatever these climate hazards are around the coastal cities would still affect non-gay people more than it would statistically, if actually, you know what? It would affect every single person, regardless of who they bone. Every person the same way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Regardless of who, where they put their, you know, into whom.
Yeah.
Which is fine nowadays.
Or, yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah.
No one cares.
No.
At all.
Nope. I don't know what else to say about that.
No, no.
I'm trying to keep it radio friendly.
I know. I've been trying to think of ways to. I'm not even sure if I can say bone.
But I didn't even bring a pair of scissors with me today.
No.
So.
You can't.
I don't know how to cut this story.
You can't cut it. You can't cut it up.
Can't.
I gotcha.
Yeah. I don't know what to do.
On top of all this, you have to believe that all of our weather events are caused by climate change and not just climate. You know?
Yeah.
I saw someone post like, oh, we've
also,
got.
Also, I mean, at what point do we in the race and we like declare a winner of the most victimized person or group of people on the planet?
I don't know. I wonder who that would be.
You know?
You know what? They don't live in America. I'll tell you that.
Is it starving children
with
cancer?
Whoever the biggest victim is on the planet is not in America.
Is it like starving children with cancer?
Because
like that's clearly not their fault. At all. They're a kid with cancer and they're starving because they live in a
are they dying of thirst too?
Probably.
Do they have legs or they don't have legs?
Probably not.
What's their status on legs?
Less legs.
Okay.
Are
they bearing arms?
I just don't understand the rush. I don't like, what does this do for LGBTQ plus people?
All of this, the only thing this does is it goes to each individual group. And it says you should care about climate change because it affects you more than it affects them. And so they go to black people and they say, oh, climate change disproportionately affects minorities. So when people talk about climate change, you're like, oh, yeah, this is bad because it disproportionately affects minorities. Plus, it's mostly caused by white people and capitalism. So I'm against that. And so therefore, anytime someone talks about putting money towards it, I'm in favor of that because it's going to somehow help me and it's going to hurt Whitey, you know, and then they do the same thing for all the different letter people. And you can add as many letters as you want in there. There's a plus sign afterwards. Mm-hmm. It's okay.
Yeah.
And so you find every single group of people that is not a straight white male. I'm sure climate change even disproportionately affects white women.
Yes.
Straight white women are the only person not affected by climate change are people like us.
Right.
We have... Climate change bounces off of us.
Well, we have Mighty Mended.
Okay, I got you.
That can withstand hurricane force winds. You know, those straight white males invented that stuff.
That's true. You know?
And we're hoarding all of it.
Thanks for going to grab that American flag. Oh, man. I forgot about that commercial. I got to look that up sometime. Okay, that's enough on number two.
All right, okay. Number three,
we talked about this guy last week, remember?
We did.
Power went out, we came back, and we talked about this guy. His name was, Dexter Taylor, I think is his name, the NYC man convicted over gunsmithing. Well, some of the information coming out from the trial is concerning to me. You see, they were going to make a civil rights / Second Amendment argument. Now, imagine you're making guns, and you're like, hey, I'm an American, and I've got an inherent right to make guns. Okay, so their defense team decides that they're going to come in here and they're going to make this great, well thought out argument about how this is bullshit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got to remember to edit that out, but whatever.
Mm. 18 minutes.
And so they're gonna make that argument. And as soon as they start to make this argument, the judge says, Charlie,
do not bring the Second Amendment into this courtroom. It doesn't exist here. So you can't argue Second Amendment. This is New York.
By the way, Charlie, that was in their opening statement. The judge interrupted the, you know how you have your opening closing arguments from the, typically you don't see a ton of interruptions in that. The judge interrupted the opening arguments multiple times, dismissed the jury, had him leave, and was like, no Second Amendment here. This is it. This is New York.
Yeah.
What?
I will say there's a positive thing about this, though, because this is on the record.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. And so this is easily going to be appealed now. Whatever this judge decides, it doesn't matter.
No.
Because this is easily, I think, going to be appealed, perhaps all the way to the Supreme Court if they keep making stupid mistakes like this.
What they could have said, this would have been different if the judge would have said, hey, we're not arguing the Constitution here. Like, New York has a law, and we're arguing about whether or not you broke that law. You want to argue about the Constitution and your Second Amendment rights? You got to go above us. You got to go to the state Supreme Court, district court, U.S. Supreme Court, and that's where we'll talk about whether or not your Second Amendment rights being violated. You know, but right here, New York has a law, and we're deciding whether or not you broke this law. And that's the job of this local judge right here to make that decision. Instead, she said, you can't argue the Second Amendment. This is New York.
Yeah. Concrete jungle.
Yeah.
Where dreams are made of, except that they're gun dreams. Yeah. Unless you want to be a gunsmith.
Are you going to, are you ready for the Civil War?
The Boog?
Yeah, you ready for the old boog that happened?
I don't know, man.
Man, we gotta keep going here, even though I just skipped past like four slides worth of information, because this girl solved all of our problems.
Mm.
When you look at her, you think that girl is probably really smart, and she's going to be able to solve most of our problems, I bet.
How many filters does she have on?
I don't know. That's definitely not her face.
Yeah.
We know that. Do we need to give a PSA right now about girls not actually showing people their faces, because it drives me nuts? I don't know who started this trend. I don't believe either that it was men. I really don't.
Yeah. The whole makeup and filters and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not. Men want to see what you actually look like.
Yeah.
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 Like, what is?
Because we can't judge you until then.
Yeah. Show us your face. Your real face.
Okay. Anyhow, she's going to solve inflation. I regret to tell you that this person actually seems to be serious.
Mm.
And I need you to keep that in mind.
Okay.
While we're watching the video, that this is actually being serious. So okay. Here we go.
All right. USA is in debt. Everybody's in debt. Why don't we just print more money? And hold on, because I've heard the whole inflation, it'll go up topic. Well, just don't make it go up. Just get the printers going. Let's print some more money. Like, aren't we the ones printing money? Hold on.
Let How me many Adderalls did she take before making this?
All of them.
Make paper. The paper is money. Okay, so we cut down more trees. Snip, snip. And we print some more money. The
Money's
world
not made out of paper.
Would be a better place if I was president. No inflation. Nothing goes up. We just print more money. We don't just give it away, but we print it, and then we're not in debt anymore. Because aren't we like
Slay,
a lot
queen.
In debt? Okay, I'm not stupid. I'm not stupid.
But for real though.
Should I like go tell the president? Like, hey, I know we were having some financial problems.
He would probably listen to you.
I just had a little idea.
Why would you tell the president? He's already doing this.
Isn't it just
that simple? I feel like so many world problems are just like have really simple solutions. Like what other, I mean, I guess the printers, they cost some money. Maybe labor.
You know what? I'm not even mad.
Me either.
I'm envious. I really am.
Ignorance like, I is wish, bliss.
Yes, it is. I wish I could float through life like this. You know, and I'm not going to make any assumptions. I mean, maybe, you know, daddy bought her that car, potentially. It's not going to make any assumptions.
She's like probably, her dad's probably in the gas station. She's probably in the passenger seat making a video right now.
But just, I'm envious of the way she can just solve problems.
I know. You know.
And it just all makes sense easily in her head.
Mm-hmm.
This is perfect.
You know what the more sad part about this is that probably
she has a college degree.
She's probably going to go to Columbia or Harvard or something like that. I don't know. And the problem is someone is going to validate her feelings on this. You're like, no, those people dragging you on TikTok right now. No, don't listen to them. You're right. We do need to do this kind of thing, you know? And they're just going to make her feel like she's right about this. And everyone who's dragging her on Twitter or TikTok or all that they're just the enemy. They're just oppressors, you know?
Here's the other problem. She probably listened to, what's that other TikTok creator that we've debunked several times? Who actually does...
She's on TYT now.
Yeah, she does sound smart. Her name is...
I can't remember her name.
I want to say it's Malia or something like that. Anyway, she actually does sound smart. I think Burbank or something.
Burbank, yeah.
Yes. Burbank.
Katie?
Katie Burbank, maybe?
I don't remember.
She's probably listened to her, and she talks about printing more money in the modern monetary theory. And so people are eating that kind of stuff up. And so they think that, I mean, her solution her whole life has probably been like, oh, when I was out of money, I would just ask for more money and it would present it itself.
Give it to me.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so she's like, huh, we're in all this debt. Why can't we just make more money? We make money. Just make more of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's problem solved. That's how money works, right?
Yeah.
You just make more. Like if I'm lacking money, you just make more and it just appears for me. And then I can buy my makeup, my face crap that I put on, and I can microbleed.
I think there's a lot of
my eyebrows and I can,
there's a lot of filter going on there too.
I can purchase additional Instagram filters or Snapchat filters.
You see this stuff right in there. You see how that's kind of smudgy, blurry. See the little bit of blur right there? There's you know, pretty good definition of a lot of things, but when you see like the blur right there under the eyes, there's one of those filters that makes your face look fake. Mm-hmm. And that's what people are going for these days, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You can tell she has extensions. I can see them.
I couldn't point those out.
Right here.
Oh, do they
see
start?
Her hairline.
You see right in here, this...
Well, see, this is her right here. Yeah.
Okay.
That's her normal hair. And then underneath that, you can tell.
There's more coming out through
that's
there.
That's extensions.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got you.
See? And when you see, if you don't have enough hair, you just ask for
you just
more,
print
hair.
More hair.
Yeah. They'll just give it to you.
Mm-hmm.
That's a solution, man. This is great.
I don't think anyone listening needs us to talk about why clearly printing money is going to lead to more inflation. There's nothing you can do if you just arbitrarily print money and there's no value back behind it. If there's no production that happens behind the printing of the money and you just flood the market with more money supply, see 2021, 2022, what happened after that? When you just flood the market with more money supply, there will be too many dollars out there. There'd be more dollars chasing the same amount of goods that there were beforehand. And like an auction, if you went to an auction, let's say you go to an auction and everyone there is there with the money that they brought with them in this town. But before the auction starts, you go there and you give each one of them $10,000. Do you think the prices at auction are going to be different than they would have been before you handed everyone $10,000.
Yeah. No, you just print more art. Like if you're auctioning off art, you just print more.
I got you.
And then everyone gets a piece of art. You know?
Fake art that doesn't actually have value behind it. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, but everyone gets one.
That's true. Okay. All right, next thing. We're going to talk a little bit about these protests going on campuses. I talked a lot about them yesterday.
Do you feel bad for her in any way?
No, she's going to be fine. Okay. She's going to find a baby daddy that's going to give her print whatever money that she wants to
She'll
show
be able
up
to
in
get
her
half
account. Yeah. And then eventually she'll take half of all of his stuff and then she'll be the victim probably.
Yeah.
After that.
Yeah.
So no, she's going to be just fine. So Greg Abbott posted this post that I don't agree with. A quick synopsis of these protests.
A quick synchrony. Yeah.
And my thoughts on them, not yours particularly, would be that nonviolent protests are good, that you should have those. Okay. And just because people are protesting does not immediately make it bad. I don't particularly care what the content of the protest is because you have the right to protest. Where the difference comes in is, where are you protesting? And are there rules for the property on which you are protesting? The property that you do not own and that someone else owns. Are there rules? Did you, perhaps as a student, sign up for these rules when you agreed to pay this college way too much money? And so even if you are organizing a love-filled, nonviolent protest where you're just holding up a sign and everyone's happy and no one's getting assaulted or blocked or whatever, that still doesn't mean that you just have a First Amendment right to be there, because there are rules that the property owners have set out for people on this property. Okay? That's what I'm protecting to you. You can't just say, well, I have First Amendment rights, so therefore I'm going to go to your neighbor's house, I'm going to hold up a sign, and I'm going to live stream over there because I'm protesting.
Yeah.
No, I can't do that.
Inside their house.
In their house. No, I can't. Yeah. All right?
Yeah.
All right. Greg Abbott says, arrest me.
Why are you calling out my neighbors? They're pretty nice here.
Yeah, they're pretty nice people over
there. Great people. Mm-hmm. I have great neighbors.
Yeah.
You could have them too if you wanted.
Arrest me. Send Charlie an email, charlie@goodmorningliberty.us, if you would like to be Charlie's neighbor's neighbor. Mm-hmm. Greg Abbott says, arrest being made right now and will continue until the crowd disappears. This is at UT Austin. These protesters belong in jail. Anti-Semitism will not be tolerated in Texas, period. Students joining in hate-filled anti-Semitic protests at any public college or university in Texas should be expelled. No, that's not free speech.
No.
That is not. It doesn't matter what the content is. Someone else can flip around and say, oh, you're supporting the Second Amendment. Oh, you're against transitioning children at the age of 5. That's hate. Mm-hmm. You hate. Yep. You must be expelled. No.
So these are public universities, which means
this is a public university.
People do have a right.
They still have rules for their grounds. There are rules, but I don't know specifically what changes when it's a public university.
The problem is the government, it's public, so a government cannot make rules against protesting.
Potentially.
It's not private land.
We literally have to look up the rules on this, because they were able to charge these people with trespassing.
Well, it's
and
not
there,
right.
There has to be rules that they're following.
Yeah, it shouldn't be a public university then. Mm-hmm. It should be private property.
We can make that argument.
Problem is, it's not private property.
But then that also gets extended, this same argument gets extended to a bunch of other private universities that are dealing with the same thing right now.
Because they take public funds.
Yeah, because they take public funds.
Don't take public funds.
Yeah, don't drive on roads. Don't send your kid to a school. Yeah. Don't do any of that. Therefore, the government can do whatever they want. Or anyone can do anything, anywhere, because all of us have taken public funds at some point in time. So that's the problem with public funds. They shouldn't exist.
Mm, exactly.
That's that problem right there. Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
Here's my problem. Greg Abbott did not list out any rules that were broken, any trespassers violating trespassing laws that have violated that. All he said was, I don't like what these people are saying, and they belong in jail and they need to be expelled.
And in all fairness, I don't like what they're saying either, by the way.
I don't like most of what they're saying either. That's another person, Josh Hammer, saying your move, Ben Sass. This has to do with Florida, University of Florida. Arrest, prosecute, I can't talk today, and deport as appropriate for some of these people. To me, it just depends on whether or not they signed up for rules for the grounds that wherever it is that they're going to college. Did they sign a thing saying, okay, I know that we can't have an encampment on these grounds. I can't block this right of way through here. I can't, whatever, have loud, noisy speakers or megaphones. Did they sign up voluntarily for rules on the grounds where they decided to voluntarily go to school? That's my question.
And that would be a contract.
Yes, that you signed. Okay, staying on the protest for a minute, luckily someone caught up with a couple protesters that were upset about stuff.
Okay. Yeah, that's good.
And so it's always good to check in on like
upset protesters.
You ever ask, why is this happening? And it's a good thing to know why it's happening.
And what would you say is the main goal with tonight's protest?
I think the goal is just showing our support for Palestine and demanding that NYU stops. I honestly don't know all of what NYU's doing.
Is there something that NYU's doing?
I really don't know. I'm pretty sure they're... Do you know what NYU's doing? About Israel. Why are we protesting here?
Palestine will be free!
I wish I was more educated.
I'm not either.
She could not have had a better response.
I wish I was more educated.
Girl, I wish I was more educated.
God, again, I'm sorry to keep pointing this out. I just can't help but notice, but the, you know, the medicine these people must be on. These are your pupils.
Yeah.
Are this big. They're taking in so much with lights right in your face. Typically when light is right in your face, your pupils will dilate.
Yeah.
They'll get smaller. But she has taken enough Adderall to make sure she sees everything.
She sees the whole world right there.
Good Lord.
Okay. We got so many dumb bleeps to go through and so little time to do it. Of course, remember, you can get your vote in on these dumb bleeps. We do this every single week on our podcast, Good Morning Liberty. Go to joingml.com and join the Fed Haters Club and find us on your podcast apps. You can listen to 1,225 episodes of Liberty Goodness. Let's continue on with Dumb Bleep of the Week. This is Liberty Night with Nate and Charlie on the Free Talk Live Network. We got to get on to number six, okay? The TikTok ban got signed.
I saw that.
This week.
So they have a year to sell.
A year. It used to be 6 months, but they changed it to a year, so it happens after the election.
Yep.
Because that's how dangerous TikTok is to our national security.
It is.
You know, you want to give them extra time.
Yes.
I do think that in America, we've got the right to view content, whether or not people like the content, whatever it is. I think that America has property rights, free market values, and that we believe that those rights extend to everyone and that we should treat all businesses that way around the globe. Our friend Josh, see, TikTok came out and said that they're not selling. I'm not selling.
Yeah, got on a little platform with a microphone.
Or it's later in the Big Short scene with Steve Carell, and he's like, "I say when we sell." That one right there. They're not going to do it. So Josh says that number one, Congress and the president shouldn't be interfering in the market like this. I have a question. Why does he believe that Congress and the president should not be interfering in the market like this?
Because then it wouldn't be a free market. I
think because the government shouldn't have this power. And two, the people have their own property rights. Businesses have their own property rights and that we shouldn't be interfering in the market. Mm-hmm. But he holds those principles so dear that he believes that the fact that TikTok is refusing to sell is a red flag about its owner's true intentions and that that's going beyond their business interests if they won't take the payout. Therefore, if someone says, Elon Musk, you are a threat to national security, and I would like to pay you $44 billion for X. If he's like, no, I'm not selling X. You're like, oh, see?
Yep.
You see how threatening that is to national security? Mm-hmm. That's a red flag. No, it's not. The fact that you want to force someone to sell their company and you don't want to sell it does not back up any of their claims. If you believe that number one is true, Josh, you put it as number one. You said Congress and the president shouldn't be interfering in the market like this. Why? Well, because individuals have rights, because people have property rights, because the government shouldn't have this kind of power. And so what if they say, well, because number one is true and because I want to own my own stuff, I'm not going to sell just because they're telling me, because I want to own this company. I think it's pretty cool. I like this company.
You know,
I like the stock.
And it could be infinitely more valuable than the whatever they're offering.
Yeah.
Or what they could sell it for today.
Well, plus when you're under the a forced sale, the price goes down.
Yes.
Because you have to sell it.
And it's like eminent domain. It's like, okay, you own this thing. Let's say property. It doesn't matter. Let's say the government's going to give you 100 times what your property is worth.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if you don't want to sell.
No.
it could mean you could give me $100 trillion, you know, and I wouldn't give up something. I don't know what it would be.
But. Which is nice because you'd be able to put on a thing that you have $100 trillion asset.
Yeah.
You know, because right. someone wants to pay you that for
yes. it. It like it doesn't matter. That doesn't mean it's a red flag.
No.
You know, I think about eminent domain just because I think about, you know, sometimes at first when I was like, oh man, they offered like, you know, $5 million for this little house that, you know, would only be worth, you know, a couple hundred thousand. But to them it's like it's a family heir that means so much more to them mm-hmm. than $5 million, this piece of property, you know? It's where the Indians are buried underneath their house and they see the Indian spirits come up and their dogs are buried in the backyard.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the cats are always digging them up.
Well, if there's Indian spirits and they buried their dogs, we have to consider the possibility that those dogs have risen from the dead mm-hmm. and are now going around causing mayhem in the local community, because I've seen several Pet Cemetery movies and that's exactly how it worked out.
And you wouldn't want to sell that, would you?
No, that's very valuable property. So, okay, let's so serious. We're so serious about everything.
Yeah.
Matt Walsh gets dumb bleep number 7. He plays this video of Danny Thompson. He's going to Wendy's and he's using fresh AI and they're using this to automate their drive-through ordering.
He's one of those conservatives that just doesn't understand the free market.
So Matt Walsh says,
unpopular opinion among conservatives anyway. Yep. Definitely true, because at least conservatives worth their salt are actually free market people.
They at least talk about the free market.
Yes.
You know,
but there probably needs to be laws against this. AI is going to wipe out 80% of the jobs on the planet if we don't do something.
If I were to think about something that's going to wipe out 80% of the jobs on the planet, I think we should get a time machine and we should go back and we should ban combines and tractors. So, you know, used to, almost everyone was a farmer and that was their job.
Mm-hmm.
And that was their productivity level. They created food and they survived. And so everyone was a farmer. Almost. And so we invented all of this machinery for farming. You know how many jobs a combine took away? For those of you who don't know, a combine is a tool for harvesting. Okay. It's like a harvester. Okay. No, don't. Don't. What, are you going to say it disproportionately affected minorities?
Yeah. just
That's what I was thinking.
Oh my God.
Not funny, Charlie. Not funny at all. Why don't we get rid of cars? Okay. Do you know how many people used to shoe horses for a living, used to breed horses, sell horses, take care of them, you know?
I can't believe you said that out loud.
Well, I was asking what you were thinking and you agreed. Okay. I didn't say it.
But you knew what I was thinking.
I knew exactly what you were thinking. Yeah, because I know who you are. We got a few minutes here. You can go back throughout history. And you could look at any number of inventions that destroyed tons of jobs. Electricity destroyed so many jobs. It created other jobs also. Okay. Cars destroyed so many jobs. Tractors and combines destroyed jobs. We should go back and kill the person that invented the refrigerator, you know, because people used to have more jobs bringing fresh products to people because they couldn't store it, you know? This is always the case. What you want to have is a market where when a job gets destroyed, new jobs can pop up in their place. We, and by we, I mean not us, the government, keep doing things to make it harder and harder for new jobs to pop up in their place. And that is the actual problem when it comes to technological innovation. Technological innovation is fine, okay? This one's called baseball stuff. The number of Black American players in Major League Baseball has plummeted to just 6%, offering a warning about what can happen when institutions de-emphasize diversity. This is what happens when you go against DEI. You see those Major League Baseball teams, they were only picking Black people to help their diversity numbers, not because they were better than other people at all. MLB, unfortunately, is a prime example of what it looks like to talk the talk without always walking the walk. I think that's the only thing I put in here from this article. They did not mention some of the numbers that I'm going to mention real quick. Here are the numbers. 59.7% are white. Now, this argument is that we are de-diversifying the MLB. My question is, what does diversity mean? I'm not really sure. Because what did it used to be? See, this is 2023. for white people used to be 61%. So actually, the number for white people has gone down also. What is that? What was that, 59? Yeah, it's gone down a little over a percent, okay? And so that went down. What is it? Who took these jobs? How do we de-diversify the MLB right here? Because we're against DEI, and therefore it must be mostly white people, even though the percentage of white people has also gone down. Turns out the enemy here are Latinos and Asians.
And Asians.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. And so this is what happens when you stop making diversity a priority. White people go down in the statistics, and black people go down in the statistics, mm-hmm. and those numbers flow to Latinos and Asians.
Yes, that's less diversity.
And that is less diversity.
Yes.
So my question is, what is diversity? Is now diversity just black people?
Yes.
Is all it means? Because that has to be what it means, right? Because you saw the percentage of white people went down too, and we have less diversity. White people down in percentage equals less diversity.
But they still have almost 60%, so that's a monopoly.
I guess so. It's a monopoly.
Yeah.
They control 60% of the MLB.
The whole sports thing is so ridiculous because sports is the greatest example of meritocracy there is.
Mm-hmm.
Teams are only going to select the best players. They don't care what the color of your skin is. I promise you.
No.
Look at the NFL. It went from mostly white to hardly white.
Just to be clear, people did used to care what the color of your skin was.
True.
A long time ago.
Yes.
You know, that's why we know who Jackie Robinson is.
Yes.
Because these annoying people keep bringing him up all the time.
Yeah.
You know.
But now, these days, I mean, you know, since the 70s, 80s, 90s, you know, at the very latest, all they care about is how good of a player are you.
What is the percentage for the NBA? Anyone have those stats readily available? It's got to be.
I don't know.
So heavily diversified, and by diversified, I mean it's got a lot of black people and not a lot of other people. So that's diversity. It's like the most diversified league that there probably is. So
2021, the NBA is composed of 73.2% black players, 16.8% white players, 3.1% Latino players, and 0.4% Asian players.
Mm.
6.6% of the players were classified as either multiracial or other races. So 73.2% black for the NBA.
Good for them. They need to bump those numbers up, though. Those are rookie diversity numbers.
Yes.
I want it all the way up to 100%. I want full diversity in the NBA, 100% black people.
That's the other thing. You have to realize that players are going to other sports now, too. Like soccer is becoming a lot more popular in America than it used to be. So even for white player, whatever.
They're even letting black people in hockey now.
Yeah. NASCAR.
You know? NASCAR?
Yeah, they're letting them in NASCAR now.
All right.
Yeah. Remember that whole noose diversity?
Yeah, that's what happened when they started diversifying NASCAR.
That's right.
Okay.
All right, well, I got to go. Love you, bye.
I know you got to go now. Okay, we'll go back over a couple things. That was number 9. Let's go to number 8. We'll play a video. Let me switch this over to just me on the screen. Nope, not just me. I want me with the screen. Okay, there we go. There's the right button. Okay, this is a squatter. This is a reporter who's wearing a robe. I don't know why. Maybe it must be the thing. Fox Morning Show, something like that. I don't know exactly what the reason is. This is technically number 8 in the list for the people that are going to be voting. Squatters are one of the most infuriating people that I can think of. Just in case you've never listened to the show before, the idea that you would just go to someone else's property and claim to have a right to that property, even if you spent money, even if you fixed something. Like, oh, I painted a room, so now I'm a squatter and I can stay here. It is the exact opposite of property rights. It destroys property rights, and property rights are what differentiated America from so many other places. It's why America grew the way that it did and became the leader of freedom for a little bit. For people. Here's this video.
If I left my house, say for a month.
And a half.
Mm-hmm. You think you would be entitled to move in there?
Well,
take my stuff?
Well, it's a lot of, I'm not the only one that is squatting. It's a lot of other people on the block, if you want to be technical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of people encouraged me to do what I'm doing now.
But she wants her place back.
Yeah, but I have put a lot of work in here, and I spent a lot of money. I am on a fixed income.
Is that power hooked up legit there?
My power is...
That's not legit.
It's not legit.
No, you steal a little bit of power.
I am blessed.
What do you do for a living?
I receive Social Security. I don't have
what happened?
Secrets.
Disability?
Yes.
What's your ailment?
I'm blessed.
I'm not going to say.
You know, that's her right. If I left my...
I'm blessed. You're stealing that power. I'm blessed to steal someone else's power. Oh boy. Yeah, there's no reason for this to exist anywhere in the United States. Anywhere. All you got to do is send some officers who are supposed to protect people's property rights. Like, that's their main job. I know you might think that their job is a tax collector for the state or the local area that they work for, but their actual main job is to protect people's property rights. Their personal property, their bodily property, their personal property, all those kinds of things. So you send a police officer, this person's trespassing, they won't leave my house, and you arrest them, and you take them out of there. Maybe you don't put them in jail, keep them in jail, whatever. I guess they're nonviolent, you know. You just arrest them, you take them out of there, and then the person who owns the place can move in, or they can sell it, or do whatever. It's that simple. You know, earlier when that girl was just simply solving problems for people, it's literally, there's your solution right there. If I was dictator day one, I would institute every single squatter gets put out on the street immediately. No question. If you don't own the property and the property owner wants you to not be there, you're gone. Day one. Day one, you're gone. Okay, that is technically number 8. We skipped over to number 9 earlier, which means now we will skip to number 10. That is also a video. I have seen Gavin Newsom play this several times, post this several times. I don't know if it's specifically a Gavin Newsom commercial. You know, Jack Posobiec says that Gavin Newsom released a new ad. I don't know if this is like a Newsom-specific ad. You guys could let me know if it is. I didn't look that up. You've probably seen it. These people trying to get across state lines, but they're carrying some contraband with them. That contraband's a baby. And they're going to get in trouble. Let's see.
We're almost there. You're going to make it.
Trump Republicans want to criminalize young Alabama women who travel for reproductive care.
Miss, I'm going to need you to step out of the vehicle, take a pregnancy test.
Stop them by taking action at righttotravel.org. Campaign for Democracy Group is responsible for the content of this advertising.
So, we all know that is not actually something that happens. We're all well aware of that, and I don't think anyone has proposed that this would be a thing that would happen, that you would pull over women driving in a car and ask them to take a pregnancy test. That's ridiculous. But it's probably an effective ad. It's probably a very effective ad. You know what? It's such an effective ad that I think that we should start doing it, that people on the right should start doing it. Why aren't people on the right doing this? Is this even dumb? I don't know. This is an effective way to manipulate the population and to scare them into giving you power or keeping you in power by scaring them about something that's never going to happen. How about that? Why don't we start making these ads? That could be cool. We do ads about what's going to happen under a communist dictatorship, socialist dictatorship, whatever it is. What's going to happen? You're just taken and you're put in. Let's make an ad where someone gets sent to a prison camp for posting about anti-vaccine propaganda or something like that. Or maybe they get sent to a prison camp because they didn't pay the proper amount of taxes, or they didn't want to pay reparations. Like, oh, you didn't pay your reparations, you're going to get sent to the gulags. You know, why don't we just do that? Some people need to get on this. If this is how we're going to do ads, if we're going to make, you know, what I just described is probably just as likely or more likely than what this ad is describing. But anyhow, that's my idea for this. That's what I want to do. I'm not even mad anymore about this. Good job, Gavin Newsom. Okay, let's go over that was being sarcastic about the good job part, by the way.
Anyhow, let's go back over the votes. Let's get the votes in. Don't Bleep of the Week voting channel. That was a whole lot of things. I understand that was so many things that we just went through. Number one was Joe Biden, and that encompassed several items for Joe Biden. That was the pause moment and the fact that the White House actually just put inaudible right there as if you couldn't actually understand the word that he said. That's because it's clearly embarrassing that he said the pause out loud, the quiet pause out loud. That was also the Sheets discrimination lawsuit. That was also him tweeting essentially that he's going to raise everyone's taxes by letting the tax cut expire. And that's also them saying that raising capital gains taxes is a good way to tax white people, you know, to fix racial inequality. And so that all goes for Joe Biden, number one. Then we have the climate, LGBTQAI, whatever, people plus disproportionately affecting them. Then we have the Dexter Taylor. Don't you come in here with that Second Amendment. This is New York. So we have that judge right there for Dumb Bleep. For that's number three. Number four was that girl who said that she has the solution for inflation, and the solution is clearly to print more money. She seemed to be serious about this, unfortunately. Number five, I'd say the dumbest bleep was Greg Abbott's words about how, I don't like what these people are saying. They belong in jail. Not, here's the rules that they've broken and the code of conduct on their university grounds that they signed up for, and so they should be arrested. It's, I don't like what they're saying. These people should be arrested, should be thrown in jail, maybe be expelled. So there's that thing. Included with that were those girls who had no clue why they were there protesting. They're just there, and they're upset. They're ready to burn something down, probably. I don't know. Maybe not. But they're upset. They're ready to go. Why? They don't know. But it's fun. It gives them some meaning in their lives, even if they don't know why they're there or what it comes from. It's great. It's perfect. I don't know if they were trolling or whatever. Number six, we really would use Josh's TikTok argument. The fact that they don't want to sell validates the national security argument. So someone makes a national security argument against you, says that you got to be forced to sell whatever it is, and you don't want to do it. You've just validated your aggressor at that point. You validated the government, because why wouldn't you just sell? You couldn't possibly just want to own your own company. No, the national security argument is valid. I'm not saying it isn't valid, by the way, but that's a stupid reason for it to be valid. The fact that someone doesn't want to. By the way, included in this that we didn't talk about because we were running out of time was Charlie Kirk. This is still in the TikTok Dumb Bleep number six. I'm just explaining these because there was a lot of stuff in here today. In 2020, he said it's time to fully block TikTok. And let's see, 2023, January, he said ban TikTok. And a couple days ago, he said, Biden just banned TikTok. He's so controlled by the tech companies that he's risking his support with Gen Z. Young voters won't forget this. He didn't just post. You know, he could have posted, hey, good job, Biden, for banning TikTok. I've literally been calling for this for years. Nope. Trump is the same way, by the way. He literally tried to ban TikTok. And now he's like, oh, no, Joe Biden's banning TikTok. That's bad. Number seven was Matt Walsh. We should not advance technologically or have innovation because it will hurt people's jobs. If that's got to be the first time anyone ever made that argument, Matt. That is a freaking genius argument. Let me tell you what. Number eight was the squatter, blessed, hashtag blessed, to be able to steal someone else's stuff. That's great. Number nine, baseball. They're against DEI, and that's why they've got more Latino and Asian people than they used to have, and less white people and less black people. It's because they're against diversity. I don't know what the argument is at all. By the way, the argument did not mention that. It did not mention that the percentage for white people went down as well. They just try to lead you to believe that the MLB is actually de-diversifying, even though technically, if diversity means not white, they got more diversified over this 10-year period, but whatever. Who cares about facts? Number 10 is that ad that Gavin Newsom's been posting all over, criminalizing, pulling you over, forcing you to take a pregnancy test before you get across the state lines. All right, get those votes in, everyone. Get those votes in. Oh, go to joingml.com. Joingml.com. That brings you to the Fed Haters Club. Those are the people that we've been talking to this whole time. They're voting right now. Wouldn't you like to vote for Dumb Bleep of the Week? Wouldn't you like to have a say? Okay. Are you anti-democracy? You just want a select few individuals to decide the fate of Dumb Bleep of the Week without actually having representation for your beliefs right now? Who would be like that? I don't understand. So if you're listening right now, you want to go to joingml.com. It's $7 a month. You can help change the world for me by going and paying at least $7 a month, okay? That's just the lowest amount. If you actually care about the future of humanity, you can kick in a little bit more. But, you know, that's up to you and whether or not you care about the future of human beings. So you make your own decisions and then sleep at night afterwards. Okay, and also go to GodHatesFeds.com. We got a bunch of shirts there. Are the votes done? Are the votes done? Going once. Going twice. Going three times. And it's the campus protest saga. This encompasses Greg Abbott's post, and it also goes all the way to those two chicks who had no clue why the heck they were actually there, which was hilarious. That was the most laughing I did during this show, and so that must mean that it was pretty dumb.
If you want to move to the free state, you're looking for some real estate, well, I know a guy who's really great. It's the Realtor Mark Warden.
Now you can learn more about the awesome things happening here in New Hampshire in our march toward liberty in our lifetime. Our friends at Porcupine Real Estate are hosting a series of webinars to educate you on the expanded freedoms enjoyed by New Hampshire citizens. Reserve your seat today at move.freetalklive.com. Topics include gun freedom, medical freedom, and political freedom victories. They also have a couple on best practices for moving to the free state and finding housing. These webinars are super helpful and free to attend once you've registered at move.freetalklive.com. Visit their YouTube channel, Porcupine Real Estate, for videos from past presentations and sign up for upcoming webinars for free at move.freetalklive.com.
PorcupineRealEstate.com.